Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player.
This week on Out Now with Aaron Abe, we're talking It Follows.
And we're going all spoilers on this one, so turn your heads and look out behind you.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe Guten Tag.
Out Now is a film podcast, which has Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review most times, and then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 185.
We're getting there. I mean, it's pretty close to 190.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And this week we're talking It Follows, the new horror movie that went from a small release to a wide release, and I'm hoping that many people were able to check out It Follows this past weekend, even though the box office doesn't suggest as much. But for people listening to this podcast, I hope you guys got to check it, because we are going to go a little spoilery on this one. We're going to try and review it as we can without doing so, but I think we want to discuss this movie more than the average length because of just things that happen in it and how much more fun it'd be to talk about it, full on. So
exactly.
Yeah, we're going to talk about It Follows. So, you can listen to this podcast up to a point if you haven't seen it, and, then I'd encourage you to go out and see it and then come back and finish the podcast. But regardless, if you don't want to be spoiled on Follows, just know that we will be spoiling the movie. So, with all that said, joining us to talk It Follows and everything else we do this week on the podcast, we have from veryaware.com, he was trailing me on the way to this podcast, it's Peter Paris.
Hey, guys.
How are you doing, Peter?
I'm good.
It's not creepy at all, Peter. Just trailing air.
Yes, I walk very slowly, though. I'm just chilling. I'm looking forward to watching that Scientology documentary on HBO later tonight. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's tonight.
Yeah, is it Going Clear? Getting Clear? Something like that.
I might have to set that DVR now. I didn't realize that was on HBO.
Yeah, that's like the big documentary. Yeah, I can't wait.
That makes sense. It's the week between like everything wrapped up last week with like Girls. And next week is Game of Thrones.
Right.
Or like 2 weeks from now is Game of Thrones.
Oh, you're right. I think Mad Men is...
It's the Frank Sinatra things is two weeks for
like tonight's the finale of Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, tonight's Walking Dead finale, and then next week's Mad Men. That's AMC. HBO, right. Meanwhile, we have just a documentary, and then this Frank Sinatra thing that I want to see too. HBO's got things, guys, by the way. That's what we're saying here. We're sponsored by HBO. We recommend the service. Get that HBO money. That's what I'm always saying.
Exactly. I want that HBO money.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, it leads to the Apple money. That's what I want. Because they're, they got that streaming deal with Apple. So I figured if we plug HBO, maybe Apple will be like, those guys are pretty cool. And then they put us on the list all the time.
I mean, we're on the front page sometime.
We're on the What's Hot area.
Sometimes.
We've been on the What's Hot for a little while. I've been noticing it. I keep track. What are we talking about?
We're talking about full-on spoilers for Smart Water.
It's for Smart Water, thank you.
Yeah. Also, we're just going to throw in every advertise.
Anyway, what are we doing? This is a movie podcast. We're talking about movies. Speaking of which, we have a new commentary track out. I know you listeners love the commentary tracks that we do. And so Brandon Maxwell and I, who you guys might also know as us being the host of the Ichapod Crane cast or the short-lived Jack and Chloe Adventure cast, which recapped last year's season of 24. Well, we all reunited for a commentary track for Too Fast, Too Furious in anticipation of the upcoming Furious 7. That's available on iTunes and everywhere else you can find our podcast now. If you want to listen to Too Fast, Too Furious commentary or need a reason to watch Too Fast, Too Furious again, there you go.
Question, does 2 Chainz show up on the podcast?
No, this was before the time of 2 Chainz.
Ah, all right.
No. If this was the Fast and Furious 6 commentary, then we'd have 2 Chainz on.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So I make sure.
No problem. Anyway, iTunes reviews and ratings, also good to get those. It helps out our show, helps other people find our show. So, if you like our various bonus commentary episodes, let alone this nonsense that we're doing right now, feel free to log into iTunes and give us a review and or rating, and we'd be happy to, thank you and be happy to get a review or rating, right, Abe?
Gracias para todos.
So, with all that in mind, let's start the show now. Let's get to a little know everybody, where each week Abe and I both have a question to ask to everyone else, and we try to do so, set the tone for the podcast, and better get to...
No, everybody.
All right. So, Abe, why don't you start this one off?
If you guys are being chased by something or someone, where would you guys go to try and give it the ultimate confrontation? The public pool?
Oh, try to give it the ultimate confrontation.
Yeah.
Not just, avoid it?
So the standoff, not hiding.
The standoff.
I have a hiding answer.
Well, I'd actually want to know that, too. So if you want to add on to it, feel free.
Well, I already have that in mind, so let me just answer that right now. I get on the train from Snowpiercer, and then, I'm always on the train.
And you're just always moving all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but if it gets on the train, then you're screwed on the
How'd it get on the train? It can't get on. It doesn't stop.
Can it take one of the physical forms of the people on the train?
It follows you. When would it get to the train?
Mm, all right, okay. Well, we'll get into that later. But where's your confrontation spot?
Confrontation spot? Like a ball pit at Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
It already has a lot of difficulty moving.
They can be slowed down a lot, yeah.
I mean, I imagine if it's in a ball pit, it's like, whoa, now what do I do?
That or the moon. Two X's for sure.
The moon.
The moon.
I mean, how it got to the moon after I just gave my Snowpiercer example, I don't know. But it's like, it's on the moon, all bets are off, I think.
Peter? Wait, so confrontation-wise... I mean, I actually thought the pool was a pretty good idea. Anything else? Strangely, I want to say something like, remember that scene in Gone Girl where he takes Amy to that weird, is it a bakery in the morning?
Yeah, the sugar storm.
Right, so basically sugar. So it's sugar or paint or anything.
So other people can see it?
Right, yes, that's basically the idea, that you're in a room where it's like, yeah. So.
Okay, new plan then. We go to Nickelodeon Studios and slime it.
Oh,
and then,
yeah.
And then we throw, it into like Nickelodeon Guts like obstacles. So it's like fighting the aggro crag and pools and all kinds of stuff.
Why did they do that in Hollow Man? Damn it.
They did do that. Well, they did throw stuff all over it. But yeah, we'd slime it. That's the new answer. That's what I have now. And put it on the aggro crag.
Jonas.
Yeah. Or put it in like Legends of the Hidden Town. Just any Nickelodeon show, basically. I mean, just throwing this thing in. Just to see how it'd win. I have a question.
All right. You know, it's funny you say Nickelodeon. Yeah. A friend of mine who saw It Follows said that there was some show on Nickelodeon called What Are You Afraid Of?
Yeah.
Do you remember this? I don't remember this at all.
I only remember Are You Afraid of the Dark?
I'm sorry. That's what it is. Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah. You don't remember Are You Afraid of the Dark?
No. And she said
you're much older than we are.
Right. I'm 85. And yes. So she said that there's an episode where basically the scene of the big pool of blood, she says that's really reminiscent. It reminded her of the Nickelodeon of that episode. And I was like, really?
I don't quite recall that because, I mean, Are You Afraid of the Dark was a solid like campfire horror anthology show, but at the same time, it wasn't very explicitly gory because it's on Nickelodeon.
I don't know. She says she remembers something of a pool of blood, and I was like, really? I was like, she's like, it was really well done on It Follows. She's like, but that's what it reminded her of.
And I was like, interesting.
Oh. Cool enough.
All right,
my question, what would be the worst possible thing to you to find following you?
A 20-foot tarantula.
Okay.
That's pretty spooky.
What would be the worst thing?
I guess if it's like following you, but at the same time, it'd kind of be like a comedy of errors, Abe, because it'd be like hiding behind a tree at some point.
It'd be like, who's behind that tree?
It's a 20-foot tarantula, so
legs.
It can't.
is it following slow still?
Oh, yeah, it's still slow.
Okay, so I can't say because obviously like a weird, a drone or something would kill me in a second, so that wouldn't be good. But if it's moving slow, what would be the weirdest?
The worst thing. I think it'd be either the Grimace or the Burger King. Probably the Burger King, actually.
No, Grimace would be, Burger King like with that really spooky mask.
I don't know the other Burger King you're referring to, but yes, the King.
The Burger King Kids Club. I don't know.
I didn't say Burger King. I said the Burger King.
Yeah, that guy's pretty spooky.
The Grimace, I'd be like, I just give up, because nothing can stop the Grimace.
he's like Five Nights at Freddy.
I don't know. What would be the weirdest? Like, I mean, I guess, honestly, there's a lot of pretty... You know what really creeped me out is that the creepy undead Ted Danson from Creepshow.
That's a good one. All right.
That was pretty creepy. Sure. Like that creeped me out when I first saw that and I was little. Like, so maybe something like that.
I'll go with that. All right. That's good. All right. That's how you play.
Know everybody.
All right. Let's move on now. Let's move on from that. That fun. Let's get to a little quiz.
Jim.
Each week and out now, we have one main movie of the week that we talk about. We also have other movies that we talk about during the week that we have quickies.
Oh, what happened? TM?
I did.
I was going to make a comment, but I was like, oh, no, I got to finish the TM.
I did it. Abe, yeah. Have you seen any other movies this week?
Pass.
So no?
No.
No, nothing? You didn't watch anything? You didn't start Bloodline with friend of the show Kyle Chandler?
No, I didn't, even though we talked about it last week with friend of the show Courtney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Peter, have you seen any other movies this week?
Wait, did I see While We're Young this week?
You can, whenever you saw the last thing, you can talk about it.
Yeah, I saw While We're Young.
That's the Noah Baumbach movie.
Noah Baumbach. Did you see it?
I have not seen it yet, no.
You want me to tell you what I thought of it?
Yes, that's the idea.
I liked it, but I know Courtney had a lot of, who you just brought up, Courtney had a lot of issues with it. I somewhat agree with her, but I wasn't as hard on it. So was that, in general, what I like about Noah Baumbach's stories is I tend to like his kind of, you know, slice of life of modern intellectuals in New York or LA or whatever, which means for me that it's more about like acting and dialogue and ideas. It's not really about plot. And in the second half of While We're Young, it becomes kind of plot heavy. And I kind of felt like the plot heaviness just to me felt kind of like obvious. However, that being said, the ending was very satisfactory. Like I was like, wow, that's very satisfying. I was like, that actually, even though I had some issues with the plottiness of it, it ended well. So overall, I thought it was pretty good.
To backtrack a bit, this is the movie of Ben Stiller, Naomi Watts, Adam Driver, and Amanda Seyfried, if I'm correct, right?
That's correct.
Yes,
correct.
And a Beastie Boy, one of the Beastie Boys.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Adam, what's his name?
Wait, like, no, I don't remember seeing.
Yeah, he's Ben Stiller's. He's in the trailer. He's like in the credit listing.
Wait, that is him? That's the guy from the Beastie Boys?
Yeah, that's what's his name? Adam Horowitz. I was right.
Mike
Screw
D?
You guys. Yeah, AD.
Oh, Ad-Rock.
Wait, is that really Adam Horowitz?
Yes.
Wow.
He's on the poster.
No, I did not even recognize him when I was, and I was a huge Beastie Boys fan. I can't believe
what are you doing over here?
Wow. I can't believe that's.
Yeah, that's like, he's like the married couple that they're friends with or whatever. Or something.
I think part of it is that he's not talking like this.
Yeah, that helps.
Wow. That's interesting. Huh.
My problem with some Noah Baumbach films is that the characters just all have very acerbic attitudes, and it rubs me the wrong ways. Where, like, it worked with me in The Squid and the Whale just because I think that movie just works for what it's doing. But, like, Margot at the Wedding was like, this is just too mean. Like, everyone's mean in this movie.
I stopped watching that movie, like, within 10 minutes.
But then I really liked Francis Ha, which didn't have that attitude, which is
Francis Ha is probably his best movie. I would agree.
That was a noise saying that, yes, I agree with you.
And I agree. Yeah, I like Greenberg as well. I like Greta Gerwig in general. I think she's a good actress, so you know, I just like I tend to like movies that hurt.
I like Greenberg, and I like Greenberg also. Yes, mm-hmm. I would agree.
But would you say it has that same kind of just the attitude of While We Were Young? Does it have? Is everyone too smart for their own good and mean because of it, or is it more broad? I guess.
I think it's more that he is kind of like Greenberg. The Ben Stiller character is very suspicious of the millennial, the 20-something generation, mm-hmm. the entitled kind of hipster generation. And it works to a degree. It doesn't. I wouldn't say it's mean as much as it's less mean and maybe more paranoid. He's really paranoid about it, if that makes sense.
And it's better than Larry David and Whatever Works, the Woody Allen film. Okay. That's a random joke. I don't need to.
I would have tried to do a Larry David impersonation, but I'm not very good at it.
It probably would have been pretty okay. I saw Kill Me Three Times. This is a hitman comedy starring Simon Pegg, among others, and a lot of Australians playing Australian. You have Sullivan Stapleton, actually, from 300, who plays Australian because he is Australian. You have, Teresa Palmer, who's generally playing English roles, even though she's Australian. And it has my second favorite Hemsworth, Luke Hemsworth. He's in there,
the
too.
Luke Hemsworth?
The Luke Hemsworth.
Oh, okay.
Probably the best-known Hemsworth, as I would say, but definitely, right? But this is a hitman comedy. It's coming on VOD pretty soon. It's not offering much new in the kind of hitman comedy genre, but I mean, it has some moments. Simon Pegg's like fun as this kind of central character, and like these, it's like three different stories all connected in some way. It's all right. It's okay.
It looks a little bit convoluted from the trailer, actually.
Yeah,
this guy trying to kill that guy. That guy's trying to kill this guy. Let's all kill everybody.
It's not at all hard to follow. It's just like it's very like Guy Ritchie light. Like,
oh
wait, your last—I just realized Aaron, your last movie was not Ex Machina?
No. I saw that like 2 weeks ago or something.
I'm hoping to see that this week. I'm hoping
I watched this one like last night.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's much more recent. That counts.
And I already talked about Ex Machina. Well, I kind of did. We're going to talk about it on the main episode at some point, so I don't want to get too far into it.
A couple weeks.
It's definitely a movie that I saw. So that's it. That's it on cookies.
Yep.
Let's move on now. Let's get to movie trailer talk, where we talk about one of the newest movie trailers of the week and when it's coming out, what we thought of it, what have you. Actually, because we're talking because we're talking about It Follows, and I'm already kind of behind on various trailers. We have so many trailers to talk about in recent weeks, so we kind of lose track. We figured if It Follows, let's talk about all the horror movie trailers that have like recently come out. And so we have three that we're going to discuss today. And the first one we're going to talk about is Insidious 3. And this is, of course, the third entry in the Insidious franchise, began by James Wan and Leigh Whannell. James Wan's busy doing some car movie that comes out soon, so Insidious 3 is written and directed as his directorial debut by Leigh Whannell. The film is apparently a prequel to the first two Insidious chapters, and it supposedly does not involve the Lambert family, I believe, is the... Rose Byrne and Patrick Wilson's characters, and this one focuses on a whole new set of people with Dermot Mulroney in the lead. Yeah, all that said, Abe and I were not big fans of Insidious 2. In fact, we kind of hated it, if I'm recalling correctly, right, Abe?
That's correct.
Peter, are you a fan of the Insidious films?
I think the first one's very good, and I thought the second one... But even James Wan himself has kind of disowned it, so it's terrible. It's a terrible movie, yeah. I mean, supposedly he had no prep time... And
it was coming like off The Conjuring. It's like making this.
Well, you know what's weird for me was that I went to a screening of The Conjuring, and then 48 hours later, I went to a really early screening of Insidious 2, which is weird because that like opened 4 months. I don't know how that happened, and I was like so bummed out with Insidious. I was like, oh my god, this is so terrible. I was like, this is the guy who just did The Conjuring. I think the trailer for the new one by default looks better, but I don't know if I need more Insidious. I guess that, you know, it's ironic because the other trailer we're going to talk about, it's weird because part of the comparison with Insidious came out is that it's kind of like a new Poltergeist. And I liked it. I was like, no, she's great. The woman, who's the woman who's the, you know,
Shay?
She's great. She's great. Yeah. And like it works, you know. It's a pretty effective, like, horror film. I think Conjuring is probably overall a better overall movie, but...
I don't agree, but that's me.
Really?
I'm not big on The Conjuring like a lot of people out there are.
Really interesting. But Insidious 2 just felt like... The problem I had with Insidious 2 is kind of the problem I had with most horror sequels. Don't get me wrong, there are ones I like. I mean, I think the Friday the 13th movies are a lot of fun, but the problem I usually have with like a Paranormal Activity or Insidious when you make a sequel is that like the more you kind of explain the backstory of whatever the mysterious thing is, the less scary it becomes. And so that's kind of all Insidious, as I recall, a lot of Insidious 2, right, is them like they're kind of explaining exactly who this person was and what its childhood was. It just really blows the air out of it for me.
My problem with Insidious 2 was that I actually like the story. It's just everything that was done to make it work was bad. Like, I didn't like the execution of it at all. I thought there was a good way to do it, and they tried to... They're using a lot... There's a lot of Back to the Future 2 going on in Insidious 2, which as I recall.
Well, I like that about the series itself. Is just that there's callbacks to the first one that you've seen already, and you're like, oh, well, now I know who that boy... whose pointing is.
My problem was just the execution of all of it. I thought it was very laughable. Like, I think everything Patrick Wilson did was, like, shot to be, like, the most over-the-top horror that just made it funny. And so I was like, well, the first Insidious scared me. This one's just like, all right.
I agree. I know. I totally agree.
So with this third one, and I was excited for Insidious 2 also. I thought, you know, having James Wan and Leigh Whannell back to, like, write and direct the second one, it was like, well, at least it's in good hands. And I was like, well, that didn't turn out to be true. So this third one is like, I don't know what to expect. I'm kind of...
I mean, I like
Dermot Mulroney. I'm always a fan of Dermot Mulroney.
I mean, here's the big question. What is worse for you? Because they're both somewhat related to James Wan, and they're both fast-tracked movies, Annabelle or Insidious 2?
That's a fun question.
I know that you hated Annabelle.
I would say Annabelle. Annabelle's worse because it's not well made. I would say if Insidious 2, it's not executed well, but I'd still say the filmmaking is good because James Wan's a good director, whereas Annabelle's, you know, one of the the second unit directors on some of his other movies or something. It's like, and it's just terrible.
I do not think Annabelle is as. I'm not gonna defend Annabelle,
have a fight with you right now.
No, I don't think it's as bad as everyone makes it out to be. I'm kind of if I had seen Annabelle and it wasn't related to the Conjuring, which of course is weird because it is, but it was just some movie on Netflix. And granted, a lot of those direct to video, well, they're the equivalent of direct to video on Netflix. There's so many of those mediocre things I see on Netflix because I like horror films. If I had seen Annabelle that way, I'd be like, meh. I'd be like, as Aaron would say, I'd be like, yeah, that was a movie. You know, I'd be like, all right, whatever.
And I think I described this in my review of it to that point where it's like some people are going to walk out of this thinking, well, it wasn't terrible. I can't just give things a pass when I know there's better horror out there. As bad as Insidious 2 is, I do think there's some interesting stuff going on in terms of how it's made. There's nothing interesting about how Annabelle's made. It's just so straightforward. That's part of my issue with it. Beyond being, you know, stupid and poorly acted and everything else, it's so flat, and it's like, here's a jump, here's another jump, here's a thing popping out of you. Like, there's nothing creative about it.
I would agree with you on the execution, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with the idea, even though they really had to make stuff up in order to make this spin-off movie. But
yeah,
I don't mind the idea of bringing in, like, it's the 60s, it's the the 70s, and it's this like whole Manson cult thing.
Which is why I think the first 10 minutes are great. I mean,
that's not a bad idea.
That's a better movie, that first 10 minutes. That's scary. Like, there's good stuff there. Then it's, you know, boring doll movie.
Well, then it becomes kind of like a Rosemary's Baby ripoff. I mean,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Which is weird. Well, actually, it's very much right, because aren't the characters' names the names of the woman is Mia, right, which is Mia Farrow, and then the guy's name is Nick, which is Nick Cassavetes.
His son's Nick Cassavetes.
That's true.
But director of The Other Woman.
And it's just weird because it's like, well, so clearly you know you're making a Rosemary's Baby reference, but
let's move on from this. We're still talking about this for some reason.
But anyways, so
Abe, do you think the trailer's any good?
Trailer's okay. I mean,
move on to the next movie ties in. So let's move on. Let's get to the next one.
Insidious 3.
Insidious 3. We might see it. Boom. Poltergeist is the next movie we're talking about. This is the remake of Poltergeist, obviously. And while I'd be quick to quick to kind of poo-poo something like this, it's directed by Gil Cannon, whose name you might not recall until I say he directed Monster House, which I think is an underrated animated family comedy that's really solid.
Oh, I like Monster House.
And it's produced by Sam Raimi and Robert Tappert. As opposed to the Platinum Dooms remakes, I actually tend to like the Sam Raimi-produced movies in terms of in the horror world, where I like the Evil Dead remake quite a bit. The Grudge, I know a lot of people like that, and there's other ones that he's been. 30 Days a Night has a lot of good moments. So having them involved on a Poltergeist remake with like the trump card being, hey, Sam Rockwell stars in it, I'm like, you know what? I'm on board. I'm on board for something like that. That's where I am. But what do you guys think?
Abe, you want to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
It looks okay. It looks actually very interesting. I'm glad that they're not kind of having the same kind of. It's basically the same setup. I'm saying, what am I thinking? It's like a house in the suburbs built on a.
It's pretty. Yeah, it's pretty indebted to the original.
But I like how it's not the same characters per se. It is modernized. You know, they got people with iPhones and whatever else. The only thing that really bothered me a lot was the clown. That clown was looking pretty ragged and spooky, and I'm not a big fan of that. But otherwise, the trailer looks kind of fun. Movie looks like it's going to be something that people should go check out.
My problem with that kind of thing, and that's, I think it stems back to like my problem with like the Omen remake, where when you have a clown like that looks so obviously evil, it doesn't make it scary to me anymore. It's like, why would you even have this to begin with?
Right?
And like,
it was a hand-me-down from his grandfather.
And that's probably what it will be, but at the same time, it's like, of course it's evil. Which is like, I watched that Omen remake with that kid. It's like, well, in the original Omen, the kid doesn't necessarily look evil. Whereas I watched the remake, it's like, well, of course he's evil. Look at him.
Why would you
like,
he just looks this evil. Guy? Like,
Peter, what do you think?
I didn't like the trailer, but I can't deny that I think that you're right. It looks better made than a normal remake, which is good, and it's got some good actors. I mean, Sam Rockwell's great and everything. But honestly, it's interesting. Abe just brought up the modern thing. I don't think it's modern enough. I don't think adding an iPhone and having the screen go blah, that to me is not enough. Like, to me, that's the biggest problem I had, is that, like, like one of my favorite horror series that's been remade a bunch of times is The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I don't think that they're all equally good. I think if I'm right, there's four of them.
There's two of them are good.
Right, well, there's two good ones. But each one tries to take their spin on the pod thing. And I guess I feel like the 80s is very much like the TV generation. Like, you know, the boob tube, everyone's in front of the television. And like, mm-hmm. what does that mean and everything? That's not really the generation we're in anymore. So I feel like if you're going to take the poltergeist idea, you could still have the girl disappear and all that, but it wouldn't be a big television anymore. I frankly just don't buy that. I'm just like, this doesn't work. I'm like, it works because they're like, well, that's the iconic shot of her. But it wouldn't be a staticky screen because nobody's – that drives me – that kind of stuff really drives me crazy where I'm like, this wouldn't be like this. But
it's digital.
Maybe it would just say, it just have like a message floating on the screen that says your service is not connected right now.
Right, or HDCP connection glossed or whatever. Like, I mean, that said, that doesn't mean it can't be fun. Right. It just to me means that it ultimately – it can only really be like a B. It can't be – to me, an A would have to be you need to find a new spin on it and make me go, wow, you've reinvented, you know, Poltergeist. And I don't think so. Like, but again, totally could be good. It's a good cast, and of course I want to see it. And I would also agree with Aaron that I do – is it Ghost House Pictures? Is that the –
Ghost House Pictures, yes.
I like – I mean, I love Drag Me to Hell, obviously, which is Sam Raimi.
That's Sam Raimi director.
And I liked the Evil Dead remake a lot.
There you go.
So yeah, no, I'm – see, the Evil Dead remake – that one did change things. It didn't have an Ash character. They didn't have, like, at the end, kind of, but the actress is not at all, like, what's his name? Oh, my God.
Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. Like, they totally went in a different direction, and it works, you know? So, but anyways, but yes, of course, I do want to see Poltergeist, so.
Definitely curious, I'm sure, yeah. And I'm curious if there's going to be reports of Steven Spielberg secretly directed it by Cale Gilkenan's side, but we'll find out, I guess. All right. So, by the way, let's see. I gotta back up a bit. I think what Poltergeist comes out like June.
June? Yeah. Oh, and Jared Harris, good casting.
Jared Harris is in there. I like Rosemary DeWitt's in there.
Yeah, they all look good. I mean,
Jane Addams, good cast. Poltergeist is May 22nd, so this Memorial Day weekend, get your ghost on. And Insidious 3 is June 5th, by the way. Thank you. And so now our last trailer we're going to talk about. The most different, I think, of between those two, which are, you know, very haunted housey. This is Maggie. This is a smaller film that stars Arnold Schwarzenegger and Abigail Breslin. It's set in this kind of post-apocalyptic world where zombies exist, I guess, and Schwarzenegger's daughter gets infected, and he has to figure out what to do with her as she slowly transforms into a zombie. And did I mention it stars Arnold Schwarzenegger as a loving father dealing with character
issues?
In a drama.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of this trailer? Let's start with Peter.
I got an email, as you probably did, from, I forgot what PR company sends that for this. And I was like, Maggie? I was like, Arnold, what is this? I clicked on it. And of course, there's a lot of pull quotes from some people I think we might know. And it's like, oh, Arnold, fantastic, and everything. But what was tricky was that the trailer, even though I really hope this is good, and it doesn't seem like Arnold's doing his normal shtick, which is good, there's not a whole lot of emoting from Arnold that I'm not sure. Like, I hope it's good. I'm getting the weird, you know what, it's weird. I'm getting, even though it's like fantasy, I'm getting the weird Stallone Copland vibe. Like,
yeah,
I'm getting it.
That's what I think. And
which
I,
is not necessarily bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, Arnold's I like attempt at that was End of Days, which is not a good movie, but that was kind of a similar
right,
way
yeah.
he tried to do it, too.
So I'm, I guess I feel like I want to see, I'm curious to see a scene with Arnold maybe emoting a little more. The way the cuts are, it's like he's kind of, he's doing the thing that all trailers do, a lot of trailers do, where he's looking off screen to something that really troubles him. He's doing that a lot. And I'm like, okay, but yeah, I can't tell. I hope it's good, but I don't know. I'm not sure how to feel about it.
Abe?
I hope that it's good, too, and I think that it's one of those situations where if they build up enough of a connection between Arnold and Abigail Breslin, you know, the third act might be going where I think it might be going, and that would be very hard to watch.
Where they team up and have to try and get back to the movie.
Exactly,
the
yeah.
Runs
so
up.
They're like, it's there's going to be a helicopter. And they're going
to have
fight
off Jack
Jamie Lee Curtis is going
to
show up, and then it's going to be like Bob's Burgers. So, No, but look, man, Arnold doing this later in his career, I'm fine with it. It's one of those things where I do want to see what would happen. Abigail Breslin, she's been hot and cold for me as an actress. You know, some things
I agree
that I really like her in, and some things I'm just like, why would she do this? Like, this is not the trajectory that I may have thought for her. But the whole entire premise is pretty neat because, like,
Moret syndrome.
Yeah, but Aaron, you brought up a good point of just. It seems like everyone is aware that there are walkers, zombies, undead, whatever, and they have to be quarantined.
I call them zigzags.
Exactly.
No, I'm not, I don't call them zigzags ever.
Just like the papers, yeah. But it's looks interesting enough.
Yeah, I for one thing, when you say Arnold Schwarzenegger doing his shtick, my mind immediately goes to him sitting in an airplane singing Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back. But I just actually saw a bit of The Last Stand, which Abe and I were big fans of.
Yeah, it's a fun
I
movie.
Liked Last Stand.
Yeah, I and I do like. It's like, how are you feeling, Sheriff? Old.
Old.
but I do like Arnold embracing kind of being in this stage of his career, which I think does reflect in some of his last movies, not counting the Dependables. I think like Escape Plan, which. Is fun for a B movie, like it does what it does, and The Last Stand. I think he's tried to play up the fact that he is what he is now. He's he's older. He's still, and I'm curious what the Terminator Sega Genesis is going to be like. Even though I really hate that trailer, but
to what you're saying, as I recall. Doesn't he have like a lot of gray hair in that Terminator trailer?
Yeah, we've
does.
Seen. Yeah,
does.
I've seen. Yeah, yeah. Again, that's why I'm curious how he plays
that one,
it.
Exactly. I want to know what the deal is with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, as I believe it's explained, is Terminators age. Their bodies are supposed to age and
it's
get withered.
It's a skin. It is an organic skin, right? Yeah. So yeah, I guess it ages.
Yeah, but of course, 2014 also gave us Sabotage, which is awful. So I want things to work out.
Whoa,
we'll
whoa, 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 whoa! Wait. You didn't like Sabotage?
Sabotage is one of my worst movies of that year. That was
two. No, no.
Easily. It's
underrated. Underrated.
It's an awful, awful movie.
Why is Cartel trying to kill some of your guys?
With some of the most creative hairstyles for any of them. And
totally underrated.
My main memory is Terrence Howard literally waiting to drive off the movie, and that's like what his role is in that movie. But anyway, Maggie opens opens on my birthday. It opens on May 8th. I mean, literally release, I assume.
Arnold knew, so he was like, let's release it.
Arnold and
birthday.
Zombies, things I really like in movies, and they're both coming out on my birthday.
So it opens.
He's like, there you go.
So it opens May 8th. That's the week after The Avengers. So you're saying that The Avengers is going to move to the number two spot.
Exactly. Avengers is now the number two most.
This
has made a movie on my list. Yeah, as far as birthday movie. I was going to see Avengers again on my birthday because Hot Pursuit doesn't look like it's doing it for me. But now that Maggie's coming out. All right. So that was a really long trailer discussion. Let's move it. So thanks for anyone that's sticking around now because they're like, when are they going to get to It Follows?
It's only been 10 minutes.
Let's get to our It Follows review, and this is where we play the trailer for it.
I used to daydream about being old enough to go on dates. I had this image of myself holding hands with a really cute guy, driving along some pretty road. It's never about going anywhere, really. It's having some sort of freedom, I guess.
Okay. You awake?
What are you doing?
You're not gonna believe me, and I need you to remember what I'm saying.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me, and I passed it to you.
Wherever you are, it's somewhere walking straight for you. All you can do is pass it along to someone else.
All right, that should have been some of the trailer for It Follows, a new horror film indebted to the 80s, but full of modern sensibilities as well. Micah Monroe stars as Jay, a young woman who has had the worst sexually transmitted disease possible passed on to her in the form of a demon of some kind that will always follow her until she passes it on to somebody else. She and her friends attempt to deal with this thing in writer-director David Robert Mitchell's crafty horror film, which has had a wide release this past weekend. Peter Paris, what did you think of It Follows?
I loved it. I think that... I had heard it was the best rated American horror film on Rotten Tomatoes since The Evil Dead, the original Evil Dead, which is a little weird because they didn't have Rotten Tomatoes back then. So I don't really count that when I'm like, well, those, I would only count something from maybe the 2000s as a comparison. But I would say, and I should have looked before we did this podcast, but I feel pretty confident, and maybe you guys can tell me, feel pretty confident in saying that I think It Follows is probably, it might be the best teen horror film since Halloween. Now, you might be thinking, but Pete, what about Scream? Scream is great, and I love Scream. And I guess I'm doing
some like Scream 2 more than Scream, but that's some people.
Well, no, but okay. Well, let's just say the Scream series. I'm. I guess
no.
I'm,
we don't have to say that. We can say Scream and Scream 2.
I'm sidestepping Scream a little because it's a little. It's more of a. It's a comedy and it's very knowing. I mean, I really like Scream. But as far as a movie that's the whole teen horror films, which means then we don't include The Sixth Sense or The Others or The Blair Witch Project. Like, there's a whole bunch of other horror films that I think are, you know, terrific. I mean, last year's Babadook or whatever. But if we're just talking teen horror, uh-huh. I don't know if there's a better horror. I feel like this movie also, probably because of the music and the way the composition is, it feels like a successor to John Carpenter's Halloween. It feels like he took the slasher thing and the whole, like, seeing Michael Myers in the background, and he kind of gave a new feel to it, you know, and I thought that was really pretty great. I know, I really loved it. I think it's an A. In fact, when it ended, I was like, if movie tickets weren't so expensive these days, I would have gotten in line and seen it again. I was like, I could watch that again right now. Like, I really loved it. I don't, a mutual friend of ours, Jeff and Courtney, did not like it.
They're the two.
They're the two, because I think it's like 95%. So, Aaron, I know you liked it. I don't know what Abe thought,
let's get to Abe.
I loved it.
Abe, what did you think of it?
So I thought that it was very well done. I think that it's a very competent movie. And like what you guys had said, it does harken back to those 80s films like John Carpenter's Halloween, The Thing, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why is because the music is kind of tony. It's very like synthesizer-esque. And even some of the shots, I mean, they drive around in, like, this old station wagon from the 70s. And just the way that they set up those scenes are pretty much callbacks. I think that there was a lot of hype around it, and I think that I kind of got myself hyped up a little bit too much. And that's the only reason why when I watched it, I was like, okay, well, I can see what it's going for, and I can see what it's doing. But also, why did this happen, or why did they do this rather than that? And
this
I'm sure
we have a spoiler episode,
right? Yeah,
yeah,
that, which is what I want to get to. But for the most part, it is very competent. I mean, the acting in it by the lead, I forget her name, Micah Monroe, very good. I mean,
she's from The Guest, right?
She's from The Guest last year, yes,
which is good too.
She's very good in it because she's got to do a lot of facial emoting, and that stuff really, really bothered me probably the most. So, yeah, it certainly is a slow burn of a movie, and I mean that in the sense of, okay, well, you know, you have to sort of get involved with it, and the scares...
Unlike
really...
the incredibly fast-paced Halloween, which is nonstop killing
oh,
no, pranks.
I mean, like, dude, that movie is, like, still one of my all-times. I mean, I'm not trying to say that Halloween
no,
is...
No, I know what you're saying.
But, I mean, for the most part, it's one of those movies where you... When you think about it afterwards, it's like, okay, well, yeah, that is kind of spooky. And also, like what I wrote Aaron, I was like, yeah, on the way home, I just had to look over my shoulder a few times because I wasn't sure. But no, I mean, it certainly is a very good movie, and it is well made from, you know, David Robert Mitchell.
Yeah, I really like this movie as well. I'm very happy that it got a wide release, regardless of how well it did. I'm just happy that to see something, you know, original horror getting out there into the mainstream and just wanting to see it succeed. I think it's a great exercise of style. I think the just kind of the camera work in this film is terrific. And I say that because that matters. I mean, that's the kind of thing where it's easy to have jump scares or whatnot. This movie has a couple of them, which are, I think, well-earned. But there's just a great sense of dread. Like, I wouldn't say it's like a... It's not a movie where I watch it and I'm, like, on the edge of my seat because of its scariness. I think it's more of, like, you get scared after the fact, kind of, in thinking about it. But just while watching the movie, it's more of all about just how it's set up and the tone of the film and the way you're seeing things being kind of put out there. And I think it's very effective in that way. I love kind of there's some great lingering camera shots because of this thing following people. You kind of get a sense that you're, you know, always paranoid because there's something around somewhere out there always following. And there's a couple just great shots of, like, there's a 360 shot in this movie that's incredible, I think. There's some really clever ways to handle framing that I just really enjoy. And all of this comes with this amazing soundtrack. I mean, the soundtrack of this film was fantastic. And it's very much indebted to kind of the movies it's is calling back to in ways that are more kind of cinematic homages out of it, rather than like out and out calling out to it. But it's just a solid horror movie. It's not funny. there's not much
well,
humor.
There's some banter that
makes it kind of humorous. But it's definitely a movie that, you know, has a sorrowful tone because of, you know, what the setup is, what's going on in it. And yeah. I really like that it took itself seriously. Like, it wasn't a movie that was winking at you, like, look at how crazy this is and how ridiculous it is. It's more of like, no, this is some serious stuff. And that, you know, being mixed with the obvious kind of parallels to what, you know, what the reality is, or what it's, you know, what it's kind of calling to, which is obviously, like, there's an argument for sexually transmitted diseases, the most obvious one, even though David Robert Mitchell says that's not really the interpretation he was going for. But there's other things like sexual abuse that come into play too. It's interesting. It's an interesting movie that's really very well made. It also has other things going on.
I mean, I feel like, that's another, to me, a mark of a really great movie, is I feel like, I mean, really, this podcast could be like 3 hours. Like, I could talk so much about this. Just quickly, I would agree. I don't think it's really about STDs. When I was watching it, I had heard that. Honestly, to me, when I was watching it, I think it's more about, anxiety and depression. I feel like that's because, you know, good horror films tend to find a way of like exploring subject matter that we're interested in right now. And
which is very much the issue of a lot of horror movies of the day. They don't have much to go to, which is a reflection of society in terms of how you really structure things.
But. And I feel like the main character, is it May? Is that her name? What is it?
Jay.
I feel like I kind of see what Abe means, that the actress has to do a lot without talking. A lot of it is this kind of like, she's just kind of looking and everything. And normally in a horror film, I like characters that are more chatty, because I want them to be able to figure out what's going on and be like, all right, what is this? How do we kill it? It's like, that's usually what I usually like.
Which, there's some of that in here.
A little. Like,
There's a little Goonies in here where they're like, let's all team up and go to the pool. Like,
that was great. And I love that. But I feel like a lot of it is more about, and I feel like that's why I think of the anxiety depression thing, where I feel like it's, there something is wrong with their friend and they can't quite penetrate this wall that like she's created, and she sees something and she has an anxiety that they can't see until that big moment.
I go a little bit further and I say abuse is like the
it could also
there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you could also literally say it's an abuse thing too, I guess.
Just,
I'm
just based it, off the what's following them, the forms that it takes of basically of generally older naked people is what the kind of the
true,
form it
that's
takes.
A good point that's yeah. a good point
and how it dispatches, like you only see there's not
it was
what
only
I like
really one scene right
yeah what and what I was about to say is there's not much gore in this movie. Like, this isn't a very violent movie for the most part. Like, there's things in it that make it R-rated, I would agree, and there's a shot at the beginning, and then there's some implications that go on and some gunshot stuff, but there's only one scene where you see it doing something to somebody else, and what it's doing is something that, again, gave me the instance that, or the thought that, like, there's kind of a sexual abuse allegory going on here.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. Go ahead, Abe.
Well, just to add on to that, and I would think that we're in full spoiler mode here now, but that's something that I thought of too, which is like, it's sure you can think of the allegory of it and an STD and whatever
else. It's the easiest one. It doesn't make it wrong. I mean, it just
right.
That's the one that's very honest.
But the ones that I was thinking of are the abuse, and also the whole entire notion of whatchamacallit. It's slipping on my mind right now, but it's essentially the abuse part comes up because there's the part where they're at the pool and she's like, I don't want to describe to you what I'm seeing right now. And later you find out that it took on the image of her father.
Yes,
and,
that's true.
And then it pans in into the photo. And at that point I was like, okay, well, I don't know why it takes on the forms of these people or, you know, whatever it is, does what it does. But this is almost one of those things where it's like, okay, I feel as though it's trying to say that there's something here more than just an STD allegory. So what we're saying here is essentially that, you know, take it for what you will, but there's more than what meets the eye, just in terms of the straight up, you know, it is what this is, and that's all that it is. No. The director probably thought about it a lot and wrote about it from other experiences that he's had as well.
What I think about when it kind of takes on different different forms, I kept thinking it was relating to just like the people it was going, like how to best go after somebody. And I think like in the kind of the beginning, the first thing you see is just like random naked woman, because there's no real obstacle that's preventing it from getting to her, or to, you know, to whoever. I guess just more of like, we need to get to you and it doesn't matter who we are. And then there's situations where like it needs to be like a super tall person because of the strength it has, or it needs to replicate one of their friends because it can get close without her realizing that it's one of her friends.
Right.
Or it could be a little child because it needs to get through a small hole. Or
it
could be her father because it knows that they're trying to trap it somehow, and so it needs to make it a relatable figure to her to make it more difficult to do so. I thought there's just a lot of creativity in the way it's exhibiting the rules of the... I love the rules, by the way. I love that this is a movie that has rules. I haven't seen that in a while.
That's what I want to bring up too, which is I like that they explained that. They explained the rules to you as simple as it is, but they put it up there right up front, which is, look, man, it's going to follow you. It always walks.
It's not dumb.
Yeah, it's not dumb. And things you always have to be aware of being having two exits at once. And it can take on the shape of anything, even manipulating your own mind and giving and looking like one of your friends or family. And then those are the rules. And essentially, it follows all of that, albeit very
it
tensely.
It follows,
yeah.
Right.
Lee Daniels, the butler.
Yeah, thank you.
But yeah, it follows the rules, and it certainly is a tense movie because it's not so much horrific. It's kind of suspenseful and thrillerish because I'm not expecting blood and guts.
You can kind of tell that it's not going to be that movie.
Exactly, yeah. It's just not that kind of movie. But, you know, there are instances where she's laying in a hospital bed and all you hear is the click-clack of feet and you're wondering, what's going to happen
here? The sense of dread is great in this movie.
Yeah, and that's really why this movie, again, I think that it's very competently made. There are some things that I'd like to ask you guys. Like, well, why didn't she just, like, lock it in a cylinder, like a four-door, you know, cylindrical block of cement? You know, and just keep a camera on it? Or why does the guy have to strap her in a wheelchair to make her see these things? Like, I don't understand would happen.
Well, two of those things. The first one, that's more of like a, where is he going to get like a room that she can do this to? And I think the idea is that it can get out of this in some way. If it could change shape, it probably has the powers to get out of a room, like given the nature of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's more of like, if you want the 4-hour version of this movie, you can get the answer to that question, but the movie doesn't need to give you that.
Right.
With the strapper to the chair thing, if you're told that someone's going to follow you and kill you unless you sleep with somebody else, you're not going to believe that person.
And also, he just, like, what is that thing when you
chloroform.
He just chloroformed her. She wakes up. She's going to run away. I mean, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
she has no reason to believe that there's a supernatural demon that's going to come after her until she sleeps with somebody.
No, like, he totally needs to be. I was waiting for you to see it. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
I think that's fine.
He needs her to understand that this is not a joke. This is not some like this is not the thing I do to all the girls. Like, this is something horrible that's going to happen to you if you don't listen up and pay attention to these rules right now. And here's a crazy naked woman that's going to kill you unless you move away.
And let's go now. Yeah. But one of the things that were I thought that it might have been gone and it might have been cool, and this kind of what I was alluding to earlier, which I couldn't really name because it was slipping. But I thought it could have been like this cool psychological movie too of like, yes, I'm seeing all these things and you guys aren't, but it's all in my mind and I just can't escape it. And that kind of goes into the deep, dark depression and whatever else. But, you know, when they go to the beach and the physical things happen, like when the chair hits that kid or he gets knocked away, I was like, okay, well, I guess they can't go with that aspect anymore.
Yeah. How crazy is it when they also realize that this is real and the movie, like, allows you to see that by understanding that it's not just that she sees it, it's that they can all just... they can interact with it in some way. It's just invisible.
It's
crazy because of that.
Yeah, and it's got some clever thoughts. So, I mean, where they're going with that is just when she's basically gives it onto one of her ex-boyfriends, and he's like, I haven't seen anything for 3 days. And I was like, oh, wow, I wonder if they're going to go with the whole entire, like, she's just crazy kind of thing. But later, you know, it comes in the form of himself. As she sees it, and that's actually kind of creepy
too.
There's
some really, the way it.
I mean,
the way it reveals itself is consistently clever in my eyes. I just really loved it every time.
See, again, this is the weird thing where I can go back to when we were talking about Insidious and about what I don't like about a lot of horror sequels. Is that
filling in the blanks?
If this movie is super big and they did a sequel, they're gonna do some dumb thing like, oh, it was some child that was abused in the 1920s, and I'll be like, oh, who cares? Like, yeah. And that ruins it. And I'm just like, I don't care about that, you know? Like, I think that, like,
I don't know, the Curse of Michael Myers made it better.
Oh, yes,
he's invincible.
I remember on the box it says the Curse of Michael Myers makes the original even better.
Oh God, yeah,
IndieWire.
ABC
I don't know. Yeah. Like,
IndieWire.
Right. The other thing I want to say that, like, without going, getting away from just the mythology or the Hornets, I gotta say, I thought it really, and I have not seen this in a while, but I feel like any movie can do this, but maybe horror films get to do this a little more. But I mean, I remember the first time I saw Halloween, and Jamie Lee Curtis is, you know, I'm surprised. I'm assuming we could talk about the end of Halloween. Like,
allow it.
This time only, Peter.
Right, Jamie Lee Curtis is. Killed the boogeyman, and she's in the foreground, and then there's that great shot of Michael Myers sits up slowly, and his head turns, and supposedly, because I wasn't there, because I'm old, but I'm not that old, but supposedly the audience is freaked out when that happened. It was one of the most chilling, like, things. And I thought what was really good about It Follows was they kind of train, or not kind of, they do, they train the audience. You, as an audience member, get used to every shot, you start looking to see every person in the background, and is that? Yeah. And I think that's a really great thing if a movie can do that. If they can visually go, okay, you are now starting to do this because of the character situation. Not a lot of movies have that opportunity to, because it's just not in the story. But in this, I was like, wow, that is so cool. They really got me, you know. And I've got to say, I would agree with you that while I was not terrified when I was watching it
afterwards,
last night when I was going to sleep, I always sleep with my I sleep in a one-bedroom apartment, and I always have my door open so the cats can move about. And there was a weird part of me that's like, do I want that door open? Like, I don't know. What if I see something coming towards me? Like, and that's a pretty good. I gotta say, that's a good mark, man. That it it really resonated. I was like, wow, that's still on my mind. You know?
Yeah, and the thing about that is, it does get you afterward too. You know, it's subsided since, but it certainly is a good mark of a film when you think about it afterward and think about it being possibly real afterward.
That's why I like the first couple Paranormal Activity movies as much as I did, because the first one especially was like, it gave me thoughts afterwards of like, doors moving, come on.
Get it together, New Earth.
Yeah.
But wind.
Peter, you bring up a great point about training the audience. What I just know the issue is for a lot of people is that it's too slow. And it's not scary, where that's not necessarily the point of the movie. It's I mean, it's deliberately paced. And it's not a movie that's relying on, you know, giant jump scares and things that are frightening you in the moment necessarily. There's things that can creep you out, perhaps. But today's audience is not dealing with that in the same way, which is where the movie, it doesn't run into a problem, but there's something about the nature of a film like this where an audience of today just won't appreciate aspects of it in the same way that if this movie came out in the 80s, an audience would appreciate it, or 70s perhaps. I mean, it's
right. It really bums me. It's funny because I was talking to Jeff, who really hated it. And I said, okay, wait, I'm like, you hated it. I'm like, so is it as bad as Ouija? And he was like, well, it's different. And I was like, no way, man. I was like, it depresses the heck out of me to think that there is probably an average teenager audience right now could go see Ouija. And I don't think that – I'm not saying that they'll think it's the best thing ever, but they'll react to it the way they're supposed to. They'll be like, oh, it's fun. That drives me crazy that, It Follows would be lame to them.
When you think about it, they've seen these movies like Paranormal Activity and Insidious and whatever else. And so they're kind of used to the whole entire – and I'm not saying you in general. I'm just –
well, even those – I mean, Paranormal Activity and Insidious, I don't think are the best – I mean, those are movies that rely on old-school tricks, I would say.
Yeah, but they've got the jump scares. They've got the
better examples would be
4 or something like that.
Better examples would be, like, the Friday the 13th remake, or the Night of the Elm Street remake, or the
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. or remake and whatever.
I mean, these movies that rely on, you know, things popping out at you, and there's some of them have style to them, but most don't. Like,
which is why this one, it is competently made. Like, you know, I'm going to give it its due credit there. And just to bring the example of, you know, the aspect of you always being aware, like what Peter was talking about, and Aaron's example of the 360 shot is a 360 shot, which is, you know that something's there, but you're not really sure. And then you see it again and you're like, okay, well, it's definitely there. They've got to do something to get out. And yeah, I think that's really, really well done. It's just that if you're the right audience for it, even if you're not the right audience for it, if you kind of appreciate the moods that you're feeling, then that's probably what the audience or what the filmmakers want you to get. It's just the mood. It's not so much like, I have to understand that this was done back in 1983 or back in whatever, 89. Right. It's
you
just more
come
of
in and put your phone down and watch a movie. And you have to keep your eyes open.
I mean, I think the reason I use Ouija as an example, besides the fact that Ouija just came out and I don't think any of us really liked it, Ouija actually has, in theory, a lot in common with It Follows. Like, it's another story about this weird cursed thing that, like, if you play this game and the characters are trying to figure out the rules, but it's so, like, pedestrian and obvious. To me, that's why I compared the two. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but the issue among the many issues of Ouija is it has no sense of logic or rules. There's literally no way to win in the world of Ouija. Like, it just, you get randomly killed because you happen to be involved with the thing that happened once.
Yeah,
like, and there's no, like, way to prepare. There's no way to stop the thing from happening.
Just to add on to the rules of It Follows, what I really liked is when they say you can drive for as far as you want to try and get a few hours ahead of it, but it's always going to follow you. And that's actually really something that plays a key role, because they've got to go away just so she can sleep. And that's very, very interesting for you to see in the film.
What did you guys think of the representation of, I guess, the teenagers? Not just her, but, like, you know, there's the kid who likes her. There's the rebel guy.
They felt teenagers. They felt like cast out of a late 70s, early 80s teenage movie.
Yeah, it certainly feels like that, too. Yeah.
There's the one character to me that could go so wrong, but it totally worked for me, is the girl that is basically, she's reading the idiot, and she's doing these quotes that is basically, like, in some way tangentially connected to what's happening. And I was like, that could be terrible.
I call her Velma, because she just seems like Velma.
She's got the glasses.
She's got the glasses.
A little bit too on the nose for me, and that's kind of what I didn't like, which is, like, especially the way that they conclude the film is just like, okay, well, I guess you can read this quote and that'll be it, but, you know, that's a little bit too much on the nose, because she seems to be that character that is trying to, you know, relay to information from her readings, and it's just...
I agree. You know what? I would kind of agree with Abe that, thinking about it now, it probably is a little too on the nose at the end, but in general, when she's just using that weird... like, it looks like a compact, but it's like a
clamshell e-reader.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
what I like is that she completely embodies what time this movie's set in, even though the movie doesn't really rely on being set in a specific era. Yeah. Like, it's very much not trying to play up to be a 70s, 80s, 90s, aughts movie. Like, it's just whenever. Obviously, you know, when cars exist, but but, like, everything about the movie does not suggest a time except for that character. Like, she's like the embodiment of some kind of timestamp, and that's like the element that makes me want to, like, watch it again and just see, like, how that plays a second time around, like, reading and knowing where the movie's going and what have you.
I mean, I do have some problems with the film too. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I was gonna say, did you guys like, which I'm assuming is another John Carpenter thing, did you guys like that they're always watching these, you know, old-timey 50s black and white movies that nobody in the real world watches anymore, but, like,
they're a bunch of hipster kids. It makes sense.
They're hipster kids that dress like Johnny Depp from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
they use VHS tapes. Like,
if anything, it's like Brick. Like, Brick is set in a world where the real world exists. It's just all these characters seem to be doing this thing. Like, they seem to be acting a certain way. That's what It Follows felt like to me in terms of how these characters are acting.
You know, it's weird to me. I actually felt like it's funny, we keep comparing to John Carpenter, and don't get me wrong, I think it's very much there, but I actually feel like there's a weird part of me that feels like the color schemes and the pacing reminded me of...
There's some Argento in there.
I was going to say, it also kind of reminds me of Blue Velvet, David Lynch.
Okay, all right.
There's something about him, like, well, I could see these characters in a David Lynch movie.
There's
like
a Lynchian, you know, feel, too. I can see where you're going with that.
Sorry, Abe, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say that one of the main issues that I have, and again, it is competent, but I did have problems with it, is just that I don't understand what that whole entire pool thing was all about, because it felt as though they were going to do something large there, but nothing comes out of it, really.
Well, I mean, they were planning on electrocuting it.
That was their plan.
Right,
they were going to plan on electrocuting it, but it kind of goes haywire, and they kind of builds up to it.
It's either that or just like, oh, it worked.
Right. Like, yeah, either worked or didn't. I mean,
it doesn't have a... It doesn't spell out what happened, because you just, like, they try to electrocute it, that doesn't work, then they eventually shoot it in the face,
which is a pretty cool shot,
it falls in, and...
Yeah, and it fills the pool with blood, and then that's the end of that sequence.
If anything, that's the shot that communicates to you what you've been trying to reach at in terms of what you thought it could have been in terms of it being in her mind. It's not in her mind, clearly, because all the other characters are interacting but I don't think you necessarily know what she's seeing at that point, because the pool fills with blood, but I don't know if you... I don't know if that's supposed to be just her perspective of things, or if it really did fill with blood, or did the other character see the blood? Like, I think there's a lot of ambiguity there, which is, right. I mean, communicated again in the end of the movie, where you don't know if it's still falling.
I feel like kids wearing a sweater. You don't even know, right?
I feel like the end of the movie is supposed to be communicating that it might still be following them, but I think the fact, and granted, this could be considered a little corny, but I'm okay with it. But I think the idea is that if we were to go back on what I was saying, this notion of, like, anxiety, you know, it may be right. It may be somewhat sexual abuse. The fact that she finally sleeps with the guy who likes her, I think that's Paul, maybe? She finally sleeps with him, and then they're holding hands at the end. You could say that the movie's somewhat implying that, like, that they are a couple, and they will deal with this thing together. And in that way, even though it's not completely gone, it makes them stronger. It's a little corny, but I'm okay with that.
I think that's certainly part of it.
Yeah, you can definitely take that away from it.
But that said... Paul is like a trooper. Like, he's taking one for the team, because he's like, I really love this girl, and I need to do this to get this thing away from her. And also, I'm going to sleep with, like, horrible prostitute women to get this thing off of me. They have sex a lot, so I guess that will get all this away. And I probably won't explain the rules. I'll just assume that they'll just keep having all this sex and
I'll just let them all die horrifically, and then, you know, once it gets to me, it'll get to me.
Well, actually, technically, I would think that the prostitutes probably don't die, because if we were to say that they are successful prostitutes, they probably pass it on that night to somebody else, so they're probably in the clear in two sex things, you know.
Well, yeah, but then those guys have to go.
Well, those guys, but
if they're going to prostitutes, how much sex are they having?
Right, that could be true, right. But here's my question. What did you guys think was the intention of... When they're going to the swimming pool, and honestly, now I don't remember if it's the Thelma character, somebody has this weird thing where they're like, oh, when we were growing up, we were told not to cross 8 Mile, and, like, you know, because I'm like, oh, they're in Detroit and everything. Yeah, yeah. What was the, and then they get to the old school, what was the point of that speech?
I think it was just more to set the mood of where they're going.
I didn't like the way that they did that, because...
Because I didn't get what that... Because I'm like, is that a class thing? They're talking about the difference between the inner city and the suburbs. I didn't get what that was.
We'd have to bring on our Detroit consultant, but...
Right.
I just think it was a way of, you know, instead of just, you know, smash cut to the next scene or have banal dialogue about, like, hey, what'd you do? I mean, I think it's just more of, like, building the dread even more.
Okay.
Building
but
the danger.
It certainly,
that's
yeah,
it. That said, that's one of my favorite shots in the movie, which is, like, one of the least logical, is just when they all leave and you see it just standing on the roof of the house as if it was about to come in. It's like, how did it get up there? I don't care. That's just a really cool shot. That's a really creepy shot of, like, oh my god, I gotta check the top of my house every day now when I get
home.
That's
true. No, you're totally right. I don't know how
it has those, like, tongue in cheek moments where, not even tongue in cheek, but just kind of like horror movie elements when they get to the pool, they've had this brooding conversation, the sky's overcast, all of a sudden there's thunder and lightning.
It's a really over-the-top horror. What do you think of when you analyze that scene? It's, like, really over-the-top.
That scene is. But again, when they – I like the way that the camera works when they're walking through the hallway. Not they, but the thing walks through the hallway, and you're just – you don't know where it's going to come from, and then all of a sudden it's there. The other thing I didn't like is that it kind of felt as though – They could have, or maybe they didn't want to on purpose, but it would have been interesting if they did a thing kind of thing where it becomes one of the people and you're just not really sure who it is. So it becomes a whodunit, so to speak.
It looks like Velma for a while on the beach.
It does, yeah.
But if it
continued and then everybody else saw it too, it would have been kind of neat. But
that's not part of the rule. That's not that movie.
You know what? You know what I was just thinking is kind of interesting, and it would go to Aaron's quality about Brick, which is that it exists in its own world. You know, I'm just thinking, this is, especially when I was thinking about Halloween, these are teenagers, sexually active, and as we all know, teenagers can be pretty horrible. Mm-hmm. There's not really any mean girls in this movie. Like, again, I know that it's conscious, but it is kind of weird that the whole movie, as I recall, there's no character in it that is an antagonist. Not really, right?
The closest you get is the older guy.
Older guy?
The one with the car.
The neighbor?
He's the rebel of a dude.
But even he's kind of cool.
He is kind of cool. I mean, he sees someone in trouble and goes to drive his car to find him. Like, I mean, so yeah, he's a
right.
But even the way the guy that gives it to Jay to begin with, you know, he's not the best of guys.
He's not the best of guys, but he was kind enough to say, like, here are the rules, don't get killed.
He's kind enough to chloroform Jay and strap her to a chair and tell her about horrible sex ED that he gave her.
Yeah, that's my issue, right? So that's what I brought up earlier. It's like, I don't understand why he had to do that. I mean, he went to extreme lengths. The movie goes to extreme lengths
so she could believe him. I mean, that's what else people is down to.
You know, but yeah, I don't think there's like any like bad.
No, there aren't any bad people. I mean, the rebel guy, I mean, he's more of just adult because he doesn't really believe in it, even though every scenario suggests that he should believe that this thing is real. And then he's just kind of chilling in his house, and then he gets killed. Like, I mean, he doesn't have the best plan for this after getting.
I think he doesn't believe it. Yeah,
I'm saying he doesn't seem to believe it, even though there's, you know, everything suggests that it should be real because they just had the whole beach attack encounter.
But he's the only person who never saw anything.
I guess, but still.
I know.
They didn't make up things.
What's his name? Paul has scratch marks on his belly.
Yeah, which I thought they were going to go somewhere with, but they didn't.
I mean, like, I don't know how that. Yeah,
is he going to be infected now too, just by a scratch?
Right.
It's not a zombie.
Well, I gotta say, you know what is weird? I just realized that it's kind of clever how the opening of the movie, well, not the opening. The opening is great, which we haven't really talked about besides the 360 thing. But near the one of the first act things is that they go to a movie theater and they play that game where they're like, yeah. Which is another game about looking. It's another game about watch, but in that, it's a fun thing, which is like, you know, what would you like to be? Oh, I want to be that child because he's got his whole life ahead of them and you're only 20 or, you know, whatever. But actually, now that I think about it, I'm like, huh, that's an early tutorial in the movie before you get to the big thing, which is pretty effective.
Also, not related to that, that's a good point, though. You mentioned there's no real, like, an antagonist character. There's also no adults. Like, there's, you know, there's people, but there's no real, like, adult character that you deal with directly.
I mean,
they interact sometimes with kind of nurses and whatnot, but there's no, like, adult character. There's no mom and dad.
Like, there's the mom, but things like, you never actually really meet her.
No, she's kind of around at times.
At the hospital.
It's a movie focused very exclusively on these kids.
And that's actually something that you brought up that I didn't think about, Peter, which is the beginning shot. It's pretty clever because you could take it as it's there, you're seeing it, but you just can't see it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the way it tracks around, there's something that – because it stops on the door of the house.
When you're tracking the girl running and then they pan behind it, it's like I'm pretty sure that there's something there. It's just that I'm not privy to seeing it. Because I don't know what I'm trying to look for yet.
By the way,
that's pretty clever.
That girl, I mean, that must have been a nightmare for her because she just gave up. She's like, back to the ocean. I don't know what else to do at this point. And she doesn't even try to escape.
She dies horribly.
Yeah. Like, well, we don't know what
her leg apart.
We don't know what the other ones look like either. We know what it looks like, I guess, when the one guy gets killed, kind of. We see him getting killed. We don't see really the end result of that. But she's the gore shot.
We don't see the. Because this is where the comparison. I had heard it was like The Ring. You mean we don't see the drowned body version or whatever?
Face warped, yeah.
Face warped,
yeah, face warped, right?
Right. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, that girl just, you know, back to the ocean. She's done. She's like, I'm going to call my dad and say goodbye, and I'm out of here.
there's one shot in the movie that I think that Aaron
or no, not Aaron, Gabe, you just said something that I didn't realize, but I think you're right. I think a lot of the camera, when the camera's panning, it's that we're looking for, like in that first shot, we're looking to see it, but we don't see it. And then it stops, and then it moves, and it's like, wait, yeah. Is there something there? You know what shot was weird to me was there's a thing where they're on the trail of finding the first guy, and they go to the high school, and the camera goes from the outside of the school inside to talking to somebody. They're talking to some like administrator, and I'm like, is that
get his records?
Is this the monster's point of view? I'm like, what is that? That was a little weird for me.
See, that's the shot that I keep. That's my 360 shot that I keep referring to. That's the one I love a lot. It's pivoted on a corner in a hallway, and it's just like it shows you the outside, so you see something's coming at them, and you realize it's coming at them, and then it pans to follow them, and it's.
Oh, I thought you meant because there is.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's the one. I was referring to. That 360 shot is the one with like the girl in the white hoodie. Whereas the opening scene is what you made me think of, Peter. I wonder if it's there, and you know, I'm not able to see it yet.
Well, the first shot, I think it clearly establishes that she sees it. We don't see it yet because we're not supposed to know exactly what's going on. But the shot that we're referring to, the school shot, it's there. Like you see, it's like
it's there, and then it's almost like a. Paranormal Activity 3 thing with the fan.
Yeah, because you know, you know it's coming, you know, then you're going away from it, so you're like, wait, what's going on now?
Closer, right? Yeah, and then when they get to the car, it's like right there, but then they get going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Interesting.
Yeah.
It's the camera taking a third person perspective, which is, you know, what a camera does to begin with, and just alerting you that this thing's coming.
So wait, Abe, did you give this highest stars?
I would say you should definitely check it out. I had some issues with it, just kind of just nitpicky things, actually. But again, it's very competently made, and it is one of those things where we talked about earlier, where it makes you think about it afterward, and that is the imprint of a pretty good movie overall. I mean, it doesn't have to be a horror movie. If anything lingers with you afterward, I'm pretty sure that it's a good movie. Just like something like The Grey, you know, where I didn't talk to anybody afterward. I just thought about what the movie meant and all the metaphors, and you know, I mean, this thing, sure, it's a bit more of a tense thriller, but I definitely do give it a pretty high remark.
And Peter, you're like over the moon for it, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I've given it an A. I mean, I think it's an A. I mean, what we're talking about right now, sure, there's a few things, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty great. Feels like the kind of movie that normally I give my normal B+, A-, because I really enjoy it, but I always want to hedge my bet. I'm always like, maybe I'm wrong, you know. But this one, I was like, nope. I'm like, I think it's pretty great. I'm like, I'm going to stick my neck out and say, no, it's really good. I'm like, well, I guess I'm not sticking my neck out. It's like 95%, so.
And this is more, like, I have the same reaction. It's more in, like, an after the fact. I saw this movie, like, 3 weeks ago at this point, and I gave it 4 stars out of 5. But, like, talking about it and continuing to think about it and just acknowledging more and more things about it, I don't have a reason to not go higher on this. Like, I like it more now than when I first saw it, just because I keep thinking about this movie, which is often the sign of a very good movie for me.
Right.
So I look forward to seeing it again. I have the soundtrack, so I look forward to, you know, using that as a way to, you know, hurry me through writing things.
Better hurry before I get you.
I would definitely say go see this movie, especially because it's, you know, it's a small movie that managed to get a wide release because of the amount of buzz it was building, and I just want us to, like, propel that buzz and pay it forward so more people see it. Right. So we get, you know, more of this and less of Ouija. The ultimate goal in everything. I say that fully acknowledging that Ouija 2 is currently in production. Yes, that's a real thing, but here we are. So.
By the way, I looked up while we were talking, I looked up best teen horror films. And
I know what you did last summer.
I mean, yeah, I know what you did last summer. Ginger Snaps, which I've never seen. The Faculty. I think except for maybe Scream.
Fright Night.
I didn't see Fright Night on here. That is great though. I do love Fright Night. But Prom Night's on here. House of Wax. Saw is not teen.
Saw's not a teen movie.
I don't know why this is on the list. Yeah. But Urban Legend. If this is the best that the internet can come up with, then yes, I think my thing stands. I think
the first Final Destination, they're in high school. The other ones are all like adults at that point.
I do like the first Final Destination. I think the second's my favorite, but
Five, baby.
Five's good too. I like Five all. All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. Is she a teenager?
They're in high school, yeah. They're like on track or whatever at the beginning of the movie.
You know, I thought that was okay. I think it was okay. Overhyped. Yeah,
that's
for
more
me.
Just like a, that's more like look how fun this is.
Oh,
like that's, no real.
Oh, quintessential okay. Teen though, which is before Halloween. Carrie.
Carrie. Yeah, that's yeah. Before Halloween.
But that's 76. So
and like... I like Carrie. It's fine, but it's like there's so much like Psycho in here. It's like, all right, De Palma, I get it. You like Hitchcock, like,
but it's very good. It's very.
It's
good.
It's good. Yes, it's yeah. Good.
It's way better than that terrible.
Yeah, the 2013 remake. Yeah,
yeah. It was bad. But yeah, no, I'm a huge. I really hope that, you know, it's weird. I don't want It Follows to fail because I hope that lets the director.
But you don't
do
want to succeed,
you know?
To make a sequel.
Well, no. Well, yeah, that's true. But no, because I have this weird feeling that to me, I feel like the way that It Follows should be seen by most probably teenagers and 20 somethings is it's that.
Theaters?
Well, no, that would be nice, but no, I'm trying to be realistic.
Okay.
Is more the thing where they're on Netflix, there are a bunch of people over, people are kind of falling asleep, and one person happens to pick It Follows, and it freaks them out that night. Like, that to me feels like the way that kind of movie should be seen, where you kind of just come upon it, and you're like, oh my god, what is this
thing? Don't
get
me started on, like, when people should see horror movies. I have so many, like, there should be a drive-in theater, double bill, Babadook, It Follows, back-to-back right now.
Well,
like,
yes!
We should drive right now to a drive-in to be able
to
see the Babadook and It
the
Follows.
One that I made, yeah.
That would be like, the dream, right?
You haven't been to Abe's drive-in? In theater,
and you have like people like just walking up behind cars and scaring the crap out of people. Like that's how you do it.
Right, you're talking about that. I'm talking about. I feel like a few years from now, if I talk to somebody who, you know, years from now, when I talk to my cousin or something, and he's like, "Oh man, yeah, I totally checked that out one night. I was on Netflix, and like that feels like that's what's going to happen." You know, it's going to be like that movie that they're just, oh, yeah, I heard about this. Let me hit play. Like,
I mean,
that's,
yeah, you're explaining basically like the backwards way of getting something to be a cult following.
Right.
I mean, like, by like, yeah, I saw it on Netflix. And like, years later, everyone pays forward It Follows. And then, you know, 7 years out, it's playing at the New Beverly because all much everyone loves It Follows. But it's like,
it's going to happen. I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure it can happen. But at the same time, it's like, can't we just have this be popular now? Halloween was Halloween's one of the most successful independent films of all time when it came out. It's still one of them. I mean, just for inflation, it still is. That didn't need people to, you know, back talk it off of Netflix. That just had people going to the movie theaters. So, I mean, let's get more of that happen.
Now, doing
Blair Witch Project's another one. I don't like the Blair Witch Project that much.
I don't like
but at
it
the
that
same
much
time,
either.
People saw it in theaters. Like,
oh, God. Actually, I got to say, I mean, that could be a. I don't know if you guys would ever do a, you know, I don't know, best of all time or whatever. I think Blair Witch is a masterpiece. I think that, I think that's amazing. Mm. And you know, what's funny is I saw it in the theater once on opening night and I loved it. And then, you know, the years go by and everyone's like, oh, it sucks. And we never get to see The Witch. And I never revisited it because part of me was like, oh, what if I'm wrong? What if it was just like a stunt? And then 2 years ago, like, I think I bought the Blu-ray years ago and I just never watched it. And then 2 years ago, I popped it in and I thought it was absolutely terrifying. And I was like, nope, this is great. I was totally right. So I was like, this is really good.
Maybe I should revisit it then because I saw it in theaters too. And I was like,
It's no Book of Shadows Blair Witch 2. That's what I'm saying.
All right,
we need to move on. This has been a really good conversation.
It's a great conversation.
I'm really happy we discussed It Follows. And it's in theaters. It's in like 1,200 theaters around the country right now. So I really hope people, you know, check it out before it loses theaters, which it will because they're, you know, things are getting furious next week. So, let's move on now. Quickly, the sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/podcast. There are over 150,000 titles to choose from, except for the Babadook. So that's unfortunate. But in terms of audiobooks that you definitely need to hear, but you can find any of those. You can download one for free. If you like that book, you get to keep it. If you like the service, you get to keep that. But if you don't, you get to just get rid of the service, but you get to keep the book they download for free. Plenty of things we could recommend, but I don't know, just find a book that you like. You could probably find something that you like and have someone gently speak it to you over the you know, your headphones.
Yeah.
So with all that said, be a winner, read or listen, audibletrial.com/podcast. All right, let's move on now. Let's get to feedback.
Feedback.
This is, of course, where we go over the various questions and answers that we received on our Facebook page from our listeners, facebook.com/outnowpodcast. We asked a number of questions. You guys gave us answers, and we're going to do it right now. So,
First question we asked everybody is, what was the last movie that really scared you? Manish writes, It Follows. And I also saw Carrie for the first time, and that was tense. Philip writes, Zodiac. I bet you know which scene.
Oh, yeah. It's the one where Jake Gyllenhaal goes on a date with Chloe 70.
It's actually the scene where the guy asks his wife if he can solve the cryptogram. But friend of the show, David, writes, The Robot Girl in Superman 3.
Okay.
Tyler writes, The Conjuring. Ryan writes The Ring. Tammy writes The Grudge. Justin writes Candyman and The Grudge. I still won't go to the attic.
Oh, Candyman. Good, nice. Bringing that back. Awesome.
Jason writes Batman and Robin. So many freeze puns. And the suit still shoots. Still shoots still? What?
The suit up shots. Gabe's
still
first day reading, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about that. Sorry, Jason. But it was ice to see you too. Rob writes Alien. At least that was the last scary movie I watched. And Taryn writes the only movie to ever scare me was the first Paranormal Activity.
Let's see. Next question we have is a favorite horror movie scores or soundtracks. Tyler has I Love Insidious, Psycho, and Halloween. David has I Love the Eerie Synth Score from Day of the Dead. Even though it's my least favorite of the original Romero trilogy, I'm also a big fan of the Goblins, the synth band used in the several of Dario Argento's films. Maxwell has, alongside other more recognized choices, I'll add Near Dark by Tangerine Dream.
Oh, nice.
Jim Dietz has any John Carpenter soundtrack. Justin has Phantasm, yes, Friday the 13th, and Halloween Still Haunt Me. Mike Jones has Christine, The Thing, probably toss it between those. Manish has I Like the Carrie soundtrack a lot. Rob says Psycho is all I can think of. I like other soundtracks from movies that are disturbing but don't necessarily fall into the horror genre. And lastly, Brandon Peters, friend of the show, has Phantasm, Maniac, the 2013 remake, and Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Interesting. Next question we asked is, what was the first horror movie you ever saw? Richard writes, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Spencer writes, I think it was when A Stranger Calls. It was horrible.
Probably the remake he's talking about.
Rob writes, I'd answer, but there was no way I can remember that. Right. Tammy writes, A Nightmare on Elm Street. Jason writes, The Terminator. Manish writes, The Birds. Danielle has Poltergeist. Friend of the show, Maxwell, has Scream. Justin has Poltergeist. Mike Jones has Creature from the Black Lagoon. Allison has It. Tyler writes, I remember watching Scream with my parents when I was maybe 7 or 8. It kickstarted my love for horror. Matthew writes, I think it was Alien. They also may have been my first R-rated movie. And lastly, Philip has Friday the 13th in theater at age 8. Only took me about 10 years to get over the trauma. Parents, don't let your babies watch horror films.
What's the first horror movie you saw? Do you remember?
I was about to say, what is the first horror movies you guys saw?
I've been trying to think of this too, and I've saw movies when I was really young, just movies that I, you know, that are R. I mean, to put it that way, I've seen a lot of things when I was at a younger age, and I don't feel bad about it. I honestly, and this is going to be funny, but I think it might be Thriller. The music video for Thriller might be the first horror movie that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't think that's lying. I'm trying.
It is a spooky music video.
I mean, my mom's a big fan of like old. I mean, she likes all movies, but she's a big fan of older horror movies. She loves horror movies in general. And one of her favorite movies of all time is The Bad Seed. So that might've been one of the first movies that I ever saw that was like a horror movie. And like, there's a lot of Hitchcock stuff I watched when I was really young. That's why I love Psycho so much. It might be Psycho, if I had to guess, maybe. But
probably was.
I think, you know, it's funny. I have like a three-way answer. I feel like, if I'm right, the first horror film I ever saw, because I'm not really sure about when I was like on video, but the first, like, I mean, if we're just talking horror, The Wicked Witch of the West terrified me, but that's not a horror film. But I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this movie, and I had to look it up right now.
Here it comes. It
came out in 1979. It's called Prophecy.
I know Prophecy.
Talia Shire.
I think it's in the cover.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, there's The Prophecy, then there's Prophecy, right? Mm.
The Prophecy is a Christopher Walken.
That's Christopher Walken. Prophecy.
This is about...
That's a Frankenheimer movie, if I recall.
It is Frankenheimer. Yeah. Yes, you're right. That was the first one that my dad took me to because I think it was like PG or something like that. And then like a few years later, I saw Poltergeist that was the first horror film I saw with like me and my friend, like just me and my friends went to the theater and saw it. Like I didn't need to take a parent to take me. So I feel like those are my two. Prophecy freaked me out because of the gore in it. It's probably not a very good movie, but at the time it was pretty terrifying.
I used to watch the Child's Play movies a lot. They were on TV.
Yeah,
like,
they would come on Halloween. Yeah, and Halloween would also come out on Halloween.
I mean, I'd seen Halloween at that point when I can recall. But yeah,
Halloween is probably the first horror film. I mean, and that's probably when I'm older, when it was like on VHS, where I was really like, I was terrified, but I also like loved it. Like, I don't know if I needed to watch Prophecy again, but I mean, although I probably did like Poltergeist, but like, But yeah, I think I remember
Ghostbusters scared me a little bit when I was younger. I remember like not being like the best on that.
I see that. Like, well, wait. What about you, Abe?
I didn't really horror's not my thing, but I had a lot of older cousins that would watch movies, and I don't really know what was the first. I just remember things like Child's Play and Halloween. But there was one movie where the family gets stuck at some place, and then they spend the night at some haunted house where there's dolls, and the dolls come alive. And
Eddie Murphy's Haunted House,
right? Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, but essentially they kill like the parents, and then the one doll just helps the little girl survive. And I can't remember the name of it.
This sounds terrifying.
Yeah,
kills the parents, help the girl survive.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, but I don't remember the name of the first one that I ever saw.
All right. Well, moving on. What's a horror movie that you wish more people knew about? Justin says Wild Wild West. He's really getting at us about his Wild Wild West thing. Alessandro has Oculus, which I was a big fan of. I
liked Oculus too.
I remember really enjoying that little movie and wishing more people had seen it so I could discuss it with them. I agree. That was a solid one from last year. Willie has Frozen. Justin follows up his Wild Wild West comment with Event Horizon. I think people know. I think the word's out on Event Horizon at this point. But,
also streaming on Netflix.
Yeah. Tyler has The Town That Dreaded Sundown. It's actually a pretty decent slasher that I feel was forgotten about due to popularity of Halloween a few years later, but it just came out on Blu-ray. It's well worth a buy. Yeah, The Town That Dreaded Sundown, that's a neat one. It recently got it's more of a sequel. It's like a remake sequel, but it does take place technically after the events of the first film, but that's a good one. Manish lastly has Repulsion, the Roman Polanski film. It's well regarded by film fans, but I think it gets eclipsed by Rosemary's Baby on a larger scale, which is pretty true, I would say. But yeah, Repulsion, that's a good movie. Yeah.
Did you guys have one?
If anyone that's seen The Babadook that hadn't seen Repulsion should definitely see that movie and be like, oh yeah, there's a lot of that in this.
Wait, because I've never seen Repulsion. It's like Babadook?
There's a lot of Repulsions from like 1964.
Because that's a Polanski movie, right?
It's a Polanski movie, yeah.
Is there a monster? I thought it was just a weird woman going crazy movie.
I mean, what's The Babadook about?
Well, I mean, yeah, I get. I mean, okay. Yeah.
But there, you can watch Repulsion. You can. There's a lot of just the way it's shot and just things about it. You can really be reminded of it.
Interesting.
I think people that have seen Repulsion certainly know this, I would say. You were asking what ones we should point out.
Pops up in your mind?
Offhand.
Just one.
I don't know. I liked Oculus. That was a good call.
There you go. Anything for you, Peter? Just one?
I do like Oculus.
There you go.
I'm trying to think of horror. I think of thrillers. I can't think of horror movies right now. Because there's like random thrillers I've seen that are like good. VOD or whatnot.
I mean, it's interesting because I think we're in a period now where I feel like it would normally be the Babadook would be the kind of one, but that's like, it's like so well rated, it's like 98% or something like that. I mean,
not everyone is a horror like a film person. I think that if you're knows these things,
no,
often.
But
if you're listening to this podcast, yes, I imagine you probably
if
know the
you,
Babadook.
If you no, but I would say if you like horror films, you would probably. You're right. The general populace, maybe, but I think if you like horror films, you probably have heard of. The Babadook, because it's that genre where it's like people are talking about it. So
fair,
I feel like you would have like heard about it.
This way. I'm going to defer to the 5 horror podcasts we did last October, and you can probably find something
that was a good
there.
Series. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. The last question we asked everybody is your favorite horror film centered around teens. Carl writes A Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and then instant classic It Follows. Sandra has Halloween. Justin has Nightmare on Elm Street. Tyler has the Scream series. Friend of the show, Maxwell, has Scream and Halloween. Taryn has, I would have to go with Friday the 13th because it's the first horror movie I ever saw. Joe Jan says, Cabin in the Woods.
Though we pointed out they're not really teens in that movie.
They're Cabin in the Woods. They're in college.
College, yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't.
How else did she learn about those books?
Yeah. Who told you about this?
Yeah. I learned it from watching you. Michael has, why didn't Jigsaw from Saw hunt teens who made bad choices? But my answer would have to go with Friday the 13th. Mike has Slumber Party Massacre Series and Teen Wolf. Shalem has Kids. And lastly, April has The Amazing Scream Trilogy. We won't discuss the travesty that was the 4th.
Oh, whoa, whoa! I like the fourth one.
Fourth was fun, right?
Abe are really terrible. That's
wait. Was that the feedback or was that Abe who said that?
That was
who
feedback. Said... But I'd be happy to talk about how terrible Scream 4 is.
No, Scream 4 is great.
It's a bad movie.
No, Scream 4 is fantastic.
It's a bad movie.
No,
it's a movie that sets up promise and then says, "No, what? Never mind. We're gonna fail."
No, no.
Remember the cleverness we had? We just got rid of that.
No,
traditional stuff.
Wait,
it's not exciting.
I would like to.
We had guts at one point where we're like, we should not kill, we should kill Neve Campbell. And then we're like, yeah, never mind.
Oh, I get it. But come on. I mean,
never mind. Who cares about taking chances? I'm only Wes Craven.
What's her name is so good. Emma Roberts. She's fantastic, man. Like, that's a great, that whole last act's great.
See,
like,
Peter and I should watch it and just have fun again.
Oh, boy.
But wait, you know what? I just thought of something. When you were, this whole list. Mine, of course, would be Halloween. That is probably my favorite, like, teen horror. I don't know how that's not, but yeah. It's probably however, you know what I just thought of? And it is strangely connected to It Follows and Babadook. Actually, I think the horror film that I wish people would give another chance or watch, and I have no idea what Aaron's going to say. He might disconnect when I say
it. Bring him out.
I think the Rob Zombie version of Halloween 2 is amazing.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I agree with you. That's a movie where – and I still don't – I don't know if I want to say I like that movie, but what I like about that movie is what it's trying to do, which is separate itself from being a Halloween movie and just be a pure Rob Zombie movie. It's this PTSD movie.
Yes. Yeah, like, that's what I was about to say. That's why I was thinking of the Babadook, and it's very much this like – it's this person who's gone through this terrible trauma.
Basically, I got to get like you and Brandon Peters on a Halloween 2 commentary this coming October because there's definitely a lot of good thoughts on what Halloween 2 tries to do.
So you respect Halloween 2?
I respect it more than I like it. I think it's brutal. Mm.
What I've always said
about it is it felt like I've always related to Tim Burton in Batman's, where I think the first Batman was like him doing a Batman movie trying to. Much like Rob Zombie tried to do a Halloween movie his own way. And then Batman Returns, much like Halloween 2, is just a Tim Burton movie,
yes,
a Rob Zombie movie,
agree.
Where it's just like, it has that template, but at the same time, it's like, we're doing things my way this time.
But I like that.
You can say that about Transformers Revenge of the Fallen as well. But, you know, first one's a Spielberg movie. Next one's like, this is a Michael Bay movie. But anyway, let's move on now. Let's get to questions. Justin asks, are you guys going to do a Die Hard commentary? Thanks for the last one. Now I have to watch Too Fast, Too Furious to answer that question. Sure, eventually.
Why not?
At some point. Yeah, we've
wait,
done.
Wait. Can it be a why Die Hard's not that great commentary? Or
no, we don't need to get into your like I hate every movie that people like.
Just don't get why everyone loves Die Hard suddenly. It's a 3-star movie. I don't know how this. Where did this cult of Die Hard come from? Like,
well, it's been there because it's a successful franchise. But that in mind, Die Hard with a Vengeance, which we have done a commentary for already, has always been my favorite film of that franchise. So there's that. But
who doesn't love Argyle, right?
Argyle.
Yeah.
Yo!
I'm sorry. I don't even know what... I have no idea what you're talking about. I've seen them all, but I don't... is that the third one?
Was Argyle's in the first movie.
Oh, he's the driver that helps him out. He's in the limo at the bottom, or he's in the parking lot.
He drives from the airport to Nakatomi Tower.
Oh, I thought you said something about With Vengeance.
I said we've already done a commentary track for Die Hard with a Vengeance, which is available on iTunes. But yes, we'd be able to do a Die Hard commentary at some point. But I also said Die Hard with a Vengeance is my favorite film in that series.
Yeah. Next question we have is from Jason. Who would you like to see in Shane Black's Predator movie? What actor should appear in it? Returning characters, etc.
So
I'd say Carl Weathers.
This is based off the fact that Shane Black is actually making a new Predator movie.
Right, he is.
Like a remake or
it's going to be a continuation.
A continuation is what he's described it as. Him and Fred Deckard, who did Monster Squad, with him. So you want dead Carl Weathers to come
dead
back?
One-armed Carl Weathers.
Dead one-armed Carl Weathers.
Flashback sequence.
So I want Bill Duke back too, with his hole in his head.
Bill Duke.
Oh, I would love that.
Get me some fun.
Wait, that's the same guy who directed Die Hard, right?
Yes, John McTiernan. Yeah,
that's a better movie than Die Hard. It's the first Predator. That's awesome. I love it.
Predator's pretty good.
You just gave me a terrible grudge match I have to do because those are both two of my favorite movies ever.
you like Predator a lot too. You like that?
I love Predator. I love Predator.
Yeah. Predator.
I'm surprised we haven't done a commentary for Predator.
Because it's so good. It's in the echelon.
As I recall, though, Predator 2 is not very good.
I like Predator.
Not
2.
Very good.
I like Predator 2.
It's like Too Fast, Too Furious. It's the weird offshoot movie where it doesn't, because Arnold's not in it and everything. Is that right?
Oh yeah, but all the other ones connect. AVP directly follows Schwarzenegger.
Well, that's true.
It's got some moments. It'd be Predator, Predator 2, Predators, Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator Requiem. Like, I mean, that's the
movie. Predators with
Brody.
Yeah, that was good. I like it too.
Not as much as Predator 2, but I like it. I don't like the part where Lawrence Fishburne tries to kill the entire movie.
That's
like 20 minutes of movie. Where I'm like, I could just be seeing cool Predator action, but instead Lawrence Fishburne's like, I'm going to overact to the extremes and be terrible. Like, so
yeah, I agree about that. But
it just slows down to a halt with him in that movie. But I like Predators mostly. I like what they're trying to do.
So Shane Black is
currently working on a new Predator movie. Yes.
Yep. He's going to write and direct, I think.
Star, some would say, of the first Predator, Shane Black. Is coming back for more Predator.
Yeah. First guy on the team that gets killed.
Yeah. Hawkins.
I can't tell.
Anyway. This is a long podcast for It Follows, by the way. Moving on. Tyler asks, take some big stars that died way too young, such as Chris Farley, John Candy, or James Dean. How would you think their careers would have panned out with more years under their belts?
That's interesting, because we kind of answered that.
We had a James Dean question about this a while back.
And it was like, well, you know, with the directory in which they're going and the film choices, I'm pretty sure would have been fine.
Yeah, probably just keep making good movies and get acclaim in some way.
I wonder if River Phoenix hadn't died, I think, of course, I agree that I think he probably would be doing hopefully good work. But you know what? You know what's weird to me is if River Phoenix had survived, do you think DiCaprio would have become a star? Because I feel like DiCaprio becomes a star because they were missing a River Phoenix, and that's what DiCaprio becomes. Not to say, and again, I like DiCaprio, but like he kind of rides off the coattails of River Phoenix dies. So do you think DiCaprio's career would have been the same if River Phoenix is still around?
That's an impossible question to answer, but at the same time...
Well, that's what we're doing right now.
I know, it's hard to ever know how that would pan out, but I would like to think they probably just both have good careers. It's not like DiCaprio's not any less talented because one person's still alive. But
the way the studio system is, I kind of feel like he might have gotten roles that might have gone to River Phoenix first.
I can see where you're coming from on that, but at the same time, I just think DiCaprio has always been a smart enough guy to take on roles that he finds interesting, and if he didn't get one role, he'd probably go on to something else that was also interesting.
Which of course would mean even less work for the DiCaprio ripoff, the poor man's DiCaprio, which is Michael Pitt. So that guy wouldn't be working at all.
Well, currently we have Dane DeHaan.
Oh yes, now we have Dane DeHaan.
Young Caprio, as I call him.
Yes, now we've got that.
Young Caprio.
Yeah, he's gonna be in Romeo and Juliet as one of the young Capulets.
Ah. Romeo plus.
I had to go. That was a reach for that one.
Yeah, you did. But hey, it worked.
Did it? Anyway.
Sadly, with Furious coming, I don't know as much as I hear what a great guy Paul Walker is, and I like him in the Fast and Furious movies. I don't know how much of a career Paul Walker was going to have beyond the huge success, which is
I don't need to run down my thoughts on the career of Paul Walker, but no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. As much as I think he's competent in certain roles, and I think he showed promise in things like Running Scared, but at the same time, I never really saw him branching out much further than that action scene.
Man of simple tastes. I think all he wanted to do was...
It was certainly working for him.
I think that I read that afterwards, is all he wanted to do was make enough money to just retire and take care of his daughter.
Yeah.
Other big one, I just realized, I'm sure maybe you guys have talked about this, but do you think not only if Heath Ledger had lived... But do you think then the Dark Knight third would be a completely different movie? It would have been, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I think that kind of goes with the press that Chris Nolan said that he really took the death pretty hard. And I'm pretty sure that if things hadn't happened the way that they did tragically, Dark Knight Rises probably would have been a better movie.
Well, it takes a different turn because it'd just be a different story completely. It's not like he had a script written out for what was going to happen before that happened. So
I always heard that one scene was something where that was from an early draft. The scene in The Dark Knight Rises where
Bane's releasing everyone from prison or whatever, and like Joker's like, we'll leave him in there, that kind of thing. Is that basically it?
No, it's something like, it's the scene with Scarecrow where he's a judge and jury.
Oh.
There's some
forgot what the scene is, but there's something like that. That scene was originally written, supposedly that was supposed to be the Joker. It was supposed to be.
This seems like rumors. It's not like Nolan's leaking out script pages.
Like... Absolutely, but I could kind of see that. I was like, oh, I could see the Joker being a judge and jury. I could see when we see that. Like,
Joker would do is he would let Bane be like ruling his city.
Oh, that's true.
This is more of Batman mythology.
That's what we get the Arkham Asylum and Arkham the game series for.
Yeah. I mean, there's some other ones Tyler mentions, like Chris Farley and John Candy. I think Chris Farley, if he were to still be alive, I think he would probably be in the kind of Sandler area where he just pops up in random movies here and now and then and maybe stars in some films. I never, as much as I, you know, laughed and had fun of Chris Farley, I never saw him as one that had potential to become like a big dramatic actor. John Candy, I could see is becoming like a character. You know, he's like JFK. He has some movies where he's like playing.
And I mean, just the same way that John Goodman is basically an all around good actor for musicals, dramas, comedies. I kind of feel John Candy was kind of the same way. So,
and not to push my own tiny cameo in it, but actually, I think John Candy's pretty good in Plane, Trains, and Automobiles.
He has
a little warmth and everything. He's not just the big funny fat guy. I mean, like
sure. He brings out Cool Runnings. I mean,
yeah,
I love Cool Runnings.
I love Cool Runnings too.
And there's a level of drama to that character. A wash up has been who cheated and wants to get back in the game. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah,
take that, Kevin Costner, Nick Farland USA.
I think the sad thing about a lot of these actors, though, especially the ones who die of like drug overdose, like the Heath Ledgers or Chris Farley's, or who was the girl from Clueless who died? What's her name?
Brittany Murphy.
Like a lot of them, because they were so plagued with narcotics dependency that I don't know. Like, yeah, it's a weird thing because I don't know how much. The drug stuff also informed their performances, and I don't know.
I mean, that applies to directors too. You look at, you know, someone like Scorsese who was doing nothing but cocaine in the '80s and had to take some time off before he got back to things again.
Then you get Robert Downey Jr. There's the weird thing where that guy, people thought that guy was going to die all the time post Less Than Zero.
I have a countdown on my wall of like when Charlie Sheen's going to die. It hasn't came up yet. So, I mean,
that's right. So, I mean, or Lindsay Lohan. That's another one that's like, oh, she's going to die.
Let's move on. This is getting dark here. Let's move on now.
That was feedback.
Feedback. Abe, do you have a game for us?
I do have a game.
You do?
Yes.
Is it that time?
I think that it is time for games.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's called It'll Follow You Until It Follows You. So essentially, this is a game where I'm going to read you guys a clue, and it'll be about a movie character or a movie where something follows somebody, and good or bad things may happen. All you have to do is buzz in with your name and name the character or the movie, and I'll accept either or.
Let's do it. I don't have time to ask more questions. Let's go.
First one. Here we go. It will follow you into space, the hood, and almost Aaron.
Leprechaun.
That is correct.
Crushed it right off the gate.
Space or the hood?
Yeah, I'm glad.
Next one.
Honestly, when you said space, I already had it. I just assumed.
It could have been Jason X.
Jason X. Yeah, you're right.
It will follow you to the Antarctic and take the form of things you know, then probably kill you.
Aaron. The thing.
That's correct. Yeah. Come on, Peter, get on it.
Well, I said the thing, but he just... Okay, I don't know.
You got to yell your name.
Yeah.
You got to have passion.
Here we go. Next one. It will follow you to the shadows even after you barbecue the book of its origin.
Wait, even after you what?
Barbecue the book of its origin.
Oh, Peter, the Evil Dead.
No. Aaron?
What do you mean? That's the Book of the Dead.
Aaron.
Blair Witch 2, the Book of Shadows?
No.
I don't know. What?
The Babadook.
Oh.
She burns
Oh, she does burn it in that.
Did you see the Babadook, Abe? I forget.
I haven't, no.
Okay, that's why I didn't guess it. Because I was like, you didn't see it. So clearly that wouldn't be the answer to a question.
Here we go. It'll follow you home, won't leave unless you tell him to go home because you don't want him anymore. Go home! We don't want you anymore.
Aaron. Harry and the Hendersons?
That is correct!
Oh, I never saw that. Yeah, that's
All right. It'll follow you in photographs, so stop taking photos and get Lin Shaye to help you.
Aaron. The Insidious?
That's correct, yeah. I don't know what they call it or if it even has a name.
Darth Maul.
But there's another.
There's
two characters. There's two evil characters. Anyway.
Yeah, okay. Darth Plagueis. I don't know.
The next one. It'll follow you if you're drinking, doing drugs, and having tons of sex. However, if you're building a canoe around the lake...
Aaron.
I'm not sure. Aaron.
Friday the 13th? Jason?
That's correct.
Or Jason, or Mrs. Yeah. Voorhees? Any of them?
Any of them. Yeah. I wonder what would happen if you were just, like, building a canoe. Just, like... Anyway. The next one. Three more. It will follow you without hesitation, but if you give it a bag of Reese's Pieces, it most definitely will follow you. Peter. That's correct. Next one. It'll follow you if you have a... I'm sorry. It'll follow you if you watch a box of 8mm films. Wait, is that a lawnmower I hear?
Aaron.
Aaron.
Sinister.
That's correct.
Oh, that is sinister. Nice. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Last one. It'll follow you if it's October 31st and you're babysitting the neighbors across the street.
Oh, Peter.
Peter.
I mean, Halloween?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay.
This was a runaway by Aaron, but Peter, you got on the board twice, so that's good.
Yay. Terrible. Okay.
All right, that was games. Let's move on to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, or streaming this week, and we have a few here that are pretty good. First up is Interstellar.
Yeah, check it out.
Do we like Interstellar?
Yeah, I like Interstellar.
I do.
I'm excited about the Blu-ray because it's going to have the...
IMAX scenes.
Yeah, it's got the two, the dual form, it changes aspect ratio. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It's packed with extras, too. I'm excited.
I'm really excited about the extras. You guys didn't have a problem with the fact that you thought that Matthew McConaughey, as a character, like, doesn't really have much of an internal... He has no real struggle as a character.
He's trying to get back to his
daughter.
I guess, but that's an external struggle. Is anyone like normally characters have like a?
He's trying to save the world.
He starts off the movie with evil Martin Luther King, right? yelling at him about how we didn't land on the moon. So I mean, he's trying to prove a point here too. He's like, I'm a pilot, damn it.
Exactly.
And you know, I'm trying to save Earth.
Can I ask you guys a question? With you're doing this your Blu-ray thing, do you guys personally? Are you still pro format for Blu-ray now that iTunes does iTunes extras, which means technically you probably could have already watched all those extras 2 weeks ago on iTunes?
Two things. One, a Blu-ray still looks better and sounds better than a streaming video does. As a person that reviews Blu-rays, it just, you know, I acknowledge that people aren't going to, not many people are going to necessarily know the difference, especially if they're only watching one and not watching them side to side to really say the difference. But I'm a person that, you know, been reviewing Blu-rays for 4 years. So, I mean, I know what the difference is. Two, extras are fun. I like getting extras, and I'm glad that they're coming in the form of, like, digital extras now, so people don't necessarily have to go out and buy a disc if they don't want to. But the one thing that these still don't have is commentaries, and I'm a huge commentary fan. So, and once they start doing that, I might stop, you know, getting a... hard copies of things. At the same time, most of the Blu-rays I get are for free, so it doesn't really matter to me too much.
Well, it's interesting. The one thing you did not say that I am very pro Blu-ray for, and I agree with everything you're saying, but the one thing you didn't say is, I gotta say, I really love packaging.
I do too.
I love like Criterion's packaging. I love like, so that's a reason why I like.
Oh, that. For sure. I mean, that's why like Criterion's always do. I mean, but ones in general. I mean, the Babadook has a really cool special edition coming out. There's a lot of Interstellar at Target. I believe there's a steelbook case version of it that I'm going for sure. I mean, there's plenty of things to admire in the packaging, and you know, I don't collect albums, but I do have a massive Blu-ray collection. So I mean, it's to each his own kind of thing, but at the same time, there are elements that I still, you know, certainly admire about having a Blu-ray disc versus having a streaming version of it.
Aaron, are you the same way?
For the most part, I do enjoy packaging. I actually don't really collect Blu-rays except for ones that I really, really want to get, but I'm a big fan, like what Aaron said, of commentaries, and I'm a big fan of extra features in which I get to delve into the mind of the creators behind something. So, you know, whether it be Wes Anderson explaining, you know, why he wanted George Clooney to go out in the open and do whatever he's doing in Fantastic Mr. Fox, you know, I enjoy those things where it's kind of just giving you their perspective and also the technical know-how so that if you want to try it out yourself, you can.
Yeah, there's certainly, you know, people that do a better job of special features than others. Something I liked about Paramount when Marvel was still under their banner is that they did a good job with those Iron Man movies. They have terrific special features. Now with Disney owning Marvel, their Blu-rays suck. So, I mean, it's a shame. there's like two-hour documentaries on making of Iron Man for the first two Iron Man movies. Then, you know, everything else is like 15 minutes. Like, here's everyone talking about how great this thing's going to be. That's boring.
That's one of the problems I usually have with a lot of
newer ones.
Yeah. Right. I always, because it is basically just
they almost found they basically feel like EPKs, like they're
exactly.
But I think Criterion, because you have the now we've got some distance on the movie and it's made by different people. I love those.
Extra That's why they're expensive, because they had to go out of their way and
right,
the budget
yeah.
to make these things and everything. Yeah, okay. Moving on, because we're still we got a long show here. Interstellar comes out this week. Wild comes out this week, which I was a big fan of.
Also good, yeah.
Wild Card comes out this week with Jason Statham, which I was not a big fan of.
Never saw it.
The Imitation Game comes out this week, which I kind of liked.
I liked it. Yeah, okay.
Gravity Diamond Lux Edition comes out.
Oh, I can't wait
out.
For this.
What's neat about this edition, this is a new edition of the Gravity Blu-ray. There is a version of this film that exists without any soundtrack. So it's all just dialogue and sound effects, no score. So that's an interesting way to watch the movie. I'm excited to see how that works.
Very excited. Me too.
That said, it's like the score did win an Academy Award. So anyway.
When you got Gravity the first time on Blu-ray, did you watch the 3D version? I never did. And now I'm looking forward to watching it in 3D. I saw the theater in 3D.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in 3D when I watched it again, but I do have a 3D TV and I'll be able to.
Right,
I
mean, so. Okay.
Also out, Silicon Valley and Veep. Both good shows.
Check it out.
Good shows, yeah.
Island of Lemurs, Madagascar 3D comes out this week as well, narrated by Morgan Freeman. And lastly, there's a number of Criterions coming out this week, and Abe, you're going to like this one. Hoop Dreams comes out this week.
Nice. Yeah.
Great.
Hoop Dreams is a fantastic documentary.
Fantastic.
It is.
And just the film in general, and see it. There you go. Okay, that's what's out now. Extremely cool. These are films that are currently streaming on Netflix that I want to recommend. I found one randomly on here to recommend, and it is Force Majeure. Force Majeure is a terrific film from last year. Yeah. It's now on Netflix streaming, so you literally have no reason not to watch it. So there you go. Next week's show. Next week we're talking about Furious 7. Obviously, most of us are very hotly anticipating this movie. Some of us have seen it already, but it's very much a movie that I'm looking forward to talking about with Abe and with our potential guests. Obviously, Jose will be on because it has The Rock in it. And as we know, when The Rock's in a movie, Jose is a guest.
Jose is on the show. Yep.
Yeah. And now, last thing we do before we wrap up here, what should people go see now and what do you plan to see next? Peter, what would you say people go and see in theaters right now?
Wait, does this have to be something I've already seen then? So I can't say Furious 7 because I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, you can't say Furious 7 because you haven't seen it yet.
Well, then it follows.
Yeah, there you go. That was easy. that's not a hard question.
Yeah.
What do you plan to see next? Furious 7.
Right? Furious 7.
Abe?
Ditto.
Okay. Yes. Well, I've seen Furious 7.
You've seen Furious 7.
It follows, I would say, I recommend. And if you're prepping for Furious 7, go watch other Fast and Furious movies. And what I plan to see next, either I'll get a chance to see Kimiko the Treasure Hunter, which I really want to see.
Interesting.
Or I know I'm seeing True Story this week, the drama of James Franco and Jonah Hill. Fun to say drama, James Franco, and Jonah Hill all in one sentence. So with all that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You could, I mean, it's weird because I've changed jobs now, and so I'm not at Wiseaboo anymore, so I still want to say it. I'm going to say go like my Facebook page, facebook.com/thecodeofzeke, because everything that I do on all the sites that I write for is all posted there. So there you go.
Yeah, agree. It's together.
Also find me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff over at walrusmoose.blogspot.com or thecodeofzeke.com, and you can also follow me at Twitter, twitter.com/walrusmoose, #Veep.
Peter, where can people find more of your work online?
Currently, I do write for VarioWare, but I haven't written for them in a while because currently I've been writing for Game Revolution, and so my video game reviews take up a lot of my time. So Game Revolution is where people can find game stuff, but I'll have to get back to you on movie stuff.
Old man gamer over here.
Yeah. Games take forever.
Peter's
man.
Not even that old.
Yes. I was just at a Call of Duty event. Oh my God. These kids in their tournaments. I don't know about that.
There you were wearing your hat backwards. Whatever they're doing to the side nowadays.
You got to use your hands? It's like a baby's toy.
Toy. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Stitcher, as well as at hhwlod.com. That is the podcast network that hosts other fun shows like the Walking Dead TV podcast, Long Box of Doom, and other shows about comics and TV and fun stuff like that.
You can listen to us over at outnow.podomatic.com, as well as soundcloud.com/outnowpodcast.
Feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on It Follows or any other film that you might have seen recently.
Ask us questions or answer our questions over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. You can follow us there. And lastly, feel free to use our voicemail line, 972-798-3830. You can talk to us or you can leave a message for us.
Message.
And,
yeah.
And if you feel like we're talking back to you, you have problems. But anyway, that's a good place we can send an audio recording. Peter, thank you for sticking with us this long to talk about It Follows and everything else we talked about today.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. It was really fun. Really fun. Always fun.
And I know I'm looking forward to talking Furious 7 next week, but this will be exciting, guys. So until we get to that point, rev up your engines, because that's going to do it for this week's episode. So long.
And goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okie pokie, artichokey.